Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned into Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your host, Jay and Trey. It is time to break down the events of this very eventful NFL draft. This is the NFL Draft Aftermath Show. And before I even make the introductions, I'm going to tell you, I'm still a Chicago Bears fan after all these years. I'm not going to be objective about the Chicago Bears draft and what they did. Let's go. I'm fired up. I'm happy they made the deal. Everything is roses. Everything is wonderful right now. The honeymoon period is in full effect. Bear down, fuck a Chicago Bears. Welcome in. You are listening to Kings of Non Sequitur, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are here with you live on a Saturday night, May the 1st, 2021. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and we'll get into all the other picks, all the other fans of all the other teams. Calm down. We'll get to all of you. We'll, most of you anyway. We'll cover the eventful first night of the draft, second night and the third night. I really don't have anything to add. I don't think either one of us caught too much of that. But that first round, a lot of fireworks, Jay.
It was fun. It was fun. It was nice because what did we not have this year for the NFL draft? We didn't have our annual retweeting rap lyrics that got dug up from 7 years ago, right? We didn't have our annual weed guy, right? We had none of that this year. So, we didn't have any of that. So we didn't have the who's the weed guy, and we didn't have anybody who tweeted old lyrics. So that was nice. That was clean. Obviously, we had the Rod story break. Perfect timing. That couldn't, if that wasn't orchestrated, I don't know what is.
For sure.
So that's a clear shot. That's a clear shot. Rodgers still has that. He's always operated with a chip on his shoulder. And even if he fully intends to play for them, they're on notice, shots fired. And so I can understand it's the politics, and they're playing this out through the media. There was no chance they were, going to deal him or any of the, so any of the hype that was all going into that part of it, I wasn't buying any of it. I was like, no, they're not trading to the 49ers. They're not trading them to Denver. I was watching NFL Network. I downloaded Sling TV. I've watched it in the past because they're one of the few ones that let you have NFL Network. So you were watching the ESPN feed. I was watching the NFL Network. In fact, I actually had the NFL Network feed on my phone playing the Sling TV as I was driving home from work. So I wasn't really watching, I'd get the occasional glance down, but the draft isn't really the most visual thing. I wasn't all that excited when the concert broke out 10 minutes into the show. I won't repeat the tweet that I sent you.
I think that was just a text. I don't think you tweeted that.
The text they sent you. Yeah. Let me see if I can dig it up here. I don't think my kids are listening to the show. They're both in bed. No one's sneaking up the stairs.
Possibility. I'll tell you about that a little in a minute.
The Oscars show, and then all of a sudden here comes random text from me. Just out of the blue. What the fuck is this concert shit? So that's the way the evening started.
Yeah, there's a possibility your daughter might be listening because she's back at home. Is she back at home or is she still at the sleepover?
Yeah, she's at home. Oh, was she sending you messages this morning?
Last night she was telling me to tell Daddy good luck with the show and say hi to you, and I had to let her know we're not doing the show.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. She wanted to make sure that you knew that she was thinking of you and wanted to say hi, because she knew that we had a show scheduled last night, except that she didn't know that you canceled the show and had to move to tonight.
Right. Well, Grant had an impromptu sleepover with Mommy and Daddy last night because she got to have a sleepover at her cousin's. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll move the show one night so I can have, you know. It's always special for him, those nights that he gets where it's just me and him and the wife. So mine, not his.
Mm-hmm. No, that's understandable.
Yeah. So here we are, Sunday night. Now we have the totality of the draft. I watched a little bit today, but, you know, the day three stuff, you really don't.
Right.
If you're mining anything, if you can mine anything out of day three and you don't tell me who the stars are going to be, good luck.
Look, I promise you, Bryce in Brooklyn has got all the draft picks broken down. He's got a flow chart where they're going to play, what technique they're going to play on the line. He's got everything figured out.
Because we all know what a 40-year-old quarterback with no offensive line needs, a running back and a tight end.
Good luck with that, guys. Go Steelers.
Yeah. So I'm glad you're so excited about Justin Fields.
I know.
Just saying.
Everybody else is going to say, you know, they're going to have their jokes and they're going to say, oh, my God, why are the Bears trading up to get another quarterback? They did it again. And yeah, they did it again. You know what? It's fine. Everyone can say what they're going to say. Bears fans are going to have this moment. You cannot take this from us. You can't do it. This is the honeymoon period.
Here is why I'm going to take the moment from you. We can jump right down to number 11 in the draft because this is relevant to you. Justin, first of all, he's going to the worst media and fan base towards quarterbacks in the country, and I think you would agree with that.
Worse than New York?
Towards their quarterbacks, where Bears fans' favorite quarterback is or not, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is always the backup quarterback.
This is true, like that, but
that town is a walking quarterback controversy. When they've had talented quarterbacks, they've hated him. They hated Jay Cutler because he was mopey. Even though he's still the best quarterback in franchise history, they didn't like him because he didn't play through a blown-out knee and he got sighted walking around in a mall. And the media is always ready to bench the quarterback for the next guy. The fans are always ready to bench the quarterback for the next guy. This is just such a it is such a terrible situation for a quarterback to go into, highly touted. I honestly don't know if it was that all these guys they drafted were terrible or they just went into the worst quarterback situation that you can go to in the league. The worst. Worse than New York. Because it takes, I mean, Eli Manning, for all the, you know what? It took them a long time to unseat him. Eli Manning would have had about four starts for the Bears before they ran him out of town.
He stinks. Get him out of there. Where's Caleb Haney?
Oh, yeah. Where's Steve Stenstrom? Where's Caleb Haney? Where's, you know the list as well as I do.
Better, unfortunately.
Let's just say this. If Justin Fields gets the start, let's say he is the guy and he wins the job in camp, and they start 1-3. Andy Dalton now becomes the most sought-after quarterback by Bears fans. It is just a curse. It is a curse upon all Bears fans. I grew up in that town. Nobody knows it better than you and I know it. Maybe you don't think that way, but your everyday average Bears fan, it's the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in the roster.
First of all, the pushback on the Bears being the worst town for a quarterback, for talented quarterbacks, is outside of Cutler and maybe Eric Kramer, name me a talented Bears quarterback.
I don't think we can actually know. I don't think anybody gets a chance.
Oh, I think they get chances. They're just no good.
They just get. They have the fastest. They have the quickest hook. And yeah, they draft. Maybe they draft poorly for good reason. Yeah, I'm just saying we've been dealing with this all the way back to Jim McMahon and Mike Tomczak and Steve Fuller, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on, and it never ends. And you even brought up Eric Kramer. The Bears fans wanted Steve Walsh over Eric Kramer, or do you forget that?
No, I understand. I remember.
The Bears fans wanted Caleb Haney over Jay Cutler. Caleb Haney, who couldn't see B.J. Raji.
He still can't believe it. He's waking up in at night still in cold sweats with B.J. Raji bearing down.
He probably has a fat head of B.J. Raji on his walls.
He doesn't need a fat head on the wall. He's got it in his head. He's embedded in his brain.
I should send him one. Yeah. But there were fans. They were clamoring for him. They went, let's give this Caleb Haney a try. So we joke about – come on. You know we joke about this to no end. Before even the podcast, before even the blog, this goes back decades of joking about this with the Bears fans clamoring for the next guy.
Whoever the backup is the most popular quarterback. I completely understand all that.
And then when that guy stinks, it's the third guy. It's not go back to the starter. Let's go to Henry Burris now.
Oh.
You know, whoever, yeah. Let's find some third string. So then it becomes what, Nick Foles if they don't move on from him? I fear for this young man that he's going into just an awful situation. Now maybe I understand your everyday average Bears fan. You're not that guy because you actually talked positively about Eric Kramer. Or I mean, people don't even talk about Jim Miller and when he was putting up those 3-4 years of that was those years when the Bears were losing all their games 41-38, and then people conveniently forget that he was like breaking all the Bears passing records during that span. But then their defense stunk, right? So there's been
into
some talent, but yeah, Jay Cutler by far is the most
game.
Talented. Yeah, but by far Jay Cutler is he's the franchise quarterback, right? He's the best quarterback in Bears franchise history.
And it's not even close. And we've said that many, many times.
Yeah. People push back on us. That's fine. They just don't know anything about football. That's okay. I worry also about the lineage.
But diehard
the Ohio
Bears
State
fans
State
like
lineage.
Renard will fight back with Jim McMahon and,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
but I love Jim. I love the Puggy QB. He wasn't good.
he had a world-class defense and Walter Payton.
And a great attitude. Punky QB, love him.
Uh-huh. And he was fun. And also right. the whole Ohio State lineage. I think that was my first text to you. Like,
Yeah. Again, you're not going to rain on our parade. Bring up
due.
All of that stuff. It's fine.
He's due.
The Buckeyes are
due.
Someone's
got to break
yeah.
through. I don't deny that it was the right move for them to make. So see, I'm not even contradicting myself because I didn't say anything about the player or the pick. I'm just talking about the situation. And I worry. I just worry for that young man going into that situation because that's an uphill climb. That is a town that's rough on quarterbacks.
It's a different street you're walking down. I'm walking down a whole different street than what you're talking
sunny.
About.
You're
I'm
on
not,
the sunny side of the street. I'm on the
I'm not
Yeah.
I'm not arguing anything that you said. I'll even do you one better. He doesn't have to go 1-3 for the fans to start clamoring for a new quarterback. He has to go 1-4-3 on his first three throws of the first game, and they'll start booing and chanting for whoever the backup is.
The first third down incompletion?
Ooh! That sucks. Man. I understand
Get
that.
The
That's
red
not
rifle.
The street I'm walking down.
Okay.
Yeah, we want the red rifle. Whoever, doesn't matter. That's fine. This is not the weekend to think about any of that. That's for all the other people to think about and worry about. Bears fandom is not thinking or worrying about any of that. You cannot rain on our parade. We're loving this pick right now. The honeymoon is in full effect until August or September. And so it's going to be a great summer. It's going to be a great summer for Bears fans. The optimism is high. We understand why it was done. We understand that Ryan Pace's job is on the line. He's feeling the heat. He had to make another move. Matt Nagy's job's on the line. He was feeling the heat. It was a very illuminating comment on the ESPN broadcast by Lewis Riddick when the pick was made, where he goes into this long, winding diatribe where he doesn't directly say that the Mitch Trubisky decision was Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy had nothing to do with it. But the way he was describing it was, okay, if this pick is who I think it's going to be, if it's Justin Fields, then I know that it's Matt Nagy's guy. I know that this is Matt Nagy making this call. if this is Justin Fields. And he kept repeating that, and he kept saying that, which was his way of saying that the Trubisky call was not Matt Nagy's guy. So this was him giving Matt Nagy a platform and throwing Ryan Pace under the bus and letting everybody know without letting everyone know what the deal was with that. I found that compelling because I didn't know that Matt Nagy was that highly thought of to have people in the media carping for him like that. So that was interesting.
Oh, well, on the NFL Network feed, it was Daniel Jeremiah. He was sort of their Mel Kiper.
Yeah.
You know, so, when he was describing the pick, and everybody, I mean, universally, I don't even hate the pick. Again, I don't hate the pick. He was considered, you know, either depending on your rankings, he was either the third or the fourth guy, right? A lot of people were debating about whether he would even go to Atlanta at four, and we would just literally have boom, 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 four quarterbacks come off the board. And I remember when Atlanta's picking at four, I'm just like, don't pick the quarterback, don't pick the quarterback. I either wanted them to trade out or pick exactly who they picked with Kyle Pitts. We'll talk about that later. But with Fields, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, he didn't so much talk about Fields. He just spent his whole time, and this was an 11 pick after a big trade up by the Bears going from 20 to 11, spent his whole time just trashing the Bears offense. Twice. Not once, twice in his minute of time talking about the Bears offense, he uttered the word boring. The Bears offense is boring. I mean, that was what he said. This offense has no life. It's boring. This is a boring offense. Like, multiple times. Like, just, you know, you talk about driving the bus. That to me seemed more like he was driving the bus over Matt Nagy.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean, we talked
certainly
about it
what
in
it
the
sounds
Bears
like
playoff
play
game. They came out with one creative play, and then that was like, oh, that's what.
That's enough. We've done enough.
That didn't work. Let's pack it in.
Yep, it's over. It's all over.
So, I think there's enough blame between the GM and the coach to go around.
And it does kind of sound like he's on Ryan Pace's side. Like, maybe he's the guy on for Ryan Pace, and then Louis Riddick on the other network is the guy for Matt Nagy. I don't know.
Yeah.
That is interesting. You know, I would definitely push back on that with Daniel Jeremiah calling the offense boring by saying, you know what makes an offense not boring? Exciting players, which good GMs actually know how to bring in.
Which the Bears don't have.
Which the Bears do not have.
No. I mean, they made a number one out of Allen Robinson, and they had some nice play. You know, the running back play was good, not great. But you're supposed to have this, dynamic, run all over the place type quarterback. Really, the problem is Mitch Trubisky had those 55, you know, Baker Mayfield completion percentage areas that he was in were not very good.
And quick, name another receiver on the Bears. So, yeah.
Oh, wait, I'll get there. Taylor Gabriel still there?
I don't even remember. He might be. I don't know.
Anthony Miller?
I like Anthony Miller. He's like a number
he's
three
always
at
hurt,
best.
Right? But he's always
and
hurt.
He can't stay on the field.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I named one. They had the kid, the tight end kid, the kid from Notre Dame, right?
Oh, Komet, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a work in progress there, so, you know.
Another 10 tight ends, yeah. That's also not exciting when you have an offense, when
no.
You keep bringing in tight ends for your fucking offense.
So we'll
God.
See. They've got the quarterback. He's got the big arm. All I remember of Justin Fields from his college career was Ohio State dug themselves into a lot of huge holes. They would climb out of a bunch of them. But he would have some just brutal first halves of games and then have to turn. Wait a minute.
That sounds familiar.
That sounds like Dak time.
You know what? I'd take Dak time over what this offense has been doing for the last 50 years. I'll take that.
At least then you got a shot of coming back from 24 to nothing.
Exactly. Which under Trubisky, you had no chance. Under
Trubisky,
Nick Foles, no chance.
But I almost called him Dwayne Haskins. But with Justin Fields, at least you got a shot. You can come back from 24 down.
I see what you're doing there. You Freudian slip trying to call him Dwayne Haskins. You cannot ran on our parade.
Oh, no.
You're not
going to
do it.
I'm already. I know what I'm going to start calling Justin Fields by probably week four. I'm going to call him Dak Haskins.
No. Can't mess
it up. That'll
just
drive you crazy.
Oh,
what?
But you can't mess it up. You cannot mess up this weekend.
I'm not going to ruin the excitement. I can't ruin the flow.
I can't ruin the excitement.
No, nope. I got 5 months to warm up for this.
We got five months to celebrate.
I totally get the optimism. It's a big move. It's a big pick. They did not get fleeced by moving up one spot by the 40, you know, like the 49ers did to them with Trubisky, who got the guy they wanted. That one still blows me away. That's all time.
It is. There's no doubt.
This was a fair value trade. The Giants clearly didn't need anybody at 11. They wanted to stock up more picks. The Bears were itching because there's New England waiting to pick, right? There were rumors that the Raiders could be hunting around for a quarterback. So I understood the move, and the Bears were trying to go into this next season with Andy Dalton and Nick Foles.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Now, I was thinking about this as a sports talk type topic, like a bar argument thing as well.
Oh, sure. We'll love that.
The Trubisky situation, as far as that draft, as far as making the bold move up from 3-2, I'm not talking about that part of it. I'm talking about the option of taking Trubisky over what may be a transcendent all-time player in Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes, I believe, went at 30?
He didn't go at 30.
Wasn't he low?
Mid-teens, I think.
Oh, okay. I thought he went late. Oh, that was the year Lamar Jackson got drafted, right? He went really late.
He was the last pick of the first round, I believe.
Right. I thought Mahomes was a pretty late draft pick, too.
Compared to Trubisky, he was late, but he wasn't that late. He was like 11, 12, 13, something like that. They've been their mid-20s, Trubisky and Mahomes, and that's already in the pantheon of worst draft decisions of all time. It's not a trade decision because it wasn't – whether two or three, that was going to be the pick. So it's not about the trade, but like just draft decisions. It's up there as the worst of all time. I think it's already in the conversation with Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan for the Trailblazers and the Bulls.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Mahomes was 10 that year. And I believe Watson was in that draft, too.
He was like 12, 13. Yeah. He was right there after Mahomes.
We don't know how that's going to go, but the talent is not undeniable. You know, the talent's undeniable. So.
Right. That situation is definitely...
That story might not have a happy ending, let's just say.
That might not work out too well for him. So I was looking at, is it worse already? Is Trubisky over Mahomes, is that already worse than Bowie over Jordan, considering how terrible Trubisky turned out to be and how great Mahomes is? And, you know, I'm bringing it up, so I guess I'll answer it first. I don't put it at Bowie Jordan until it's a different sport. You can't just carry a team to 5-6 rings like Jordan did in football, because football takes so many other people. You can't do that as one person. So I won't say 6 rings for Mahomes makes it worse than Bowie Jordan, but I will say, like, if he gets to like 3 or 4, yeah, I think I'm putting that over Bowie Jordan as worst calls of all time, because it's just awful.
I'll tell you how it makes. I'll tell you how you could make the Bowie Jordan one even worse, right? Because was it Houston at 1?
Houston took Olajuwon at 1. That's right.
Houston was 1, and then who picked 2?
Portland was 2, and because they had a 2-guard already in Clyde Drexler, they said, that Jordan guy? Nah, we'll take the big bot, the big guy, Sam Bowie.
That would have been like if the Bulls were 2 and Houston was and Portland was 3, right? And then Portland trades up to 2 with the Bulls to draft Sam Bowie.
That would be really bad.
That would be about the equivalent of what the Bears did. They were so hot to trot for Trubisky. They moved up from 3-2 to draft the guy that the team that they traded with wasn't going to take, because they got solid.
Draft the guy that would have.
Yeah.
That would have been there at 3 anyway.
So they were so afraid that somebody was going to jump up to 2 to grab Mitchell Trubisky. that they had to make that trade, and they paid for it too. I mean, that was what was really stunning.
Boy, did they ever pay for it?
The only I'd still say Bowie Jordan is worse, only for the fact that 9 teams passed on Patrick Mahomes.
This that part is undeniable, that Mahomes falling to 11 is basically on the same level as Stephen Curry falling to 11, 12, 13,
yeah,
wherever he
or
fell.
Or Aaron Rodgers falling to 26.
Yeah, that's another good one.
You know?
So you can't say that, oh, the top team or the top couple teams, they missed out on. There's a lot of teams that missed out. So it's not all Chicago, but just taking the trade even out of the equation, just the fact that Pat Mahomes and looking like what he's going to turn out to be was there, and they just decided, this Trubisky guy, the North Carolina kid, oh, that's it. That's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Where's Trubisky even play this year? Does he go to Canada? Does he have to go on a rehabilitation tour?
Didn't he sign as a backup with the Bills or something?
I don't know.
I think so.
I don't know. I have a feeling you'll see him again.
I think he's the second string behind Project now. Well, maybe he'll learn how to play some football watching him.
Yeah, these guys, you know, not a lot of these guys left Chicago and got any kind of a rehabilitation. Josh McCown had a nice career. That's about Mitch Trubisky's ceiling right there.
Yeah, but
he's gonna play for 17 teams.
That's such a weird. I don't know if you're gonna repeat the career that McCown had, because McCown was retired and coaching high school football when Chicago called him up, and then 10 years later, McCown's still bouncing around and making money and backing up all over the league.
And for a career backup, he's sort of like the poor man's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Serviceable at times.
Yeah, when he's had to play, he you can do worse as a backup. Let's just say that.
He was not awful sometimes. Sometimes
right.
he was,
so
and sometimes
if
he
you're,
wasn't.
If your career trajectory is that you're going to be a serviceable NFL backup, a lot of guys would kill for that.
Millionaire, multimillionaire.
That's right.
Heck of a way to do it.
So you're all in on Fields. I mean, let's take the rose-colored glasses off, or orange and blue-colored glasses off for a second. Do you have any hesitations at all about this pick?
Oh, if I wasn't a Chicago Bears fan, yes, I'd sound like everyone else sounds right now, which is, who's he throwing to? What? How is he going to?
You can fix that. The trouble is, will the coaches the coaches whose jobs are all on the line, the fans who don't know what to do with a good quarterback, even when they have one, and the media in that town, are they going to let him struggle long enough to grow?
Without any criticism at all? No, of course not. Of course he's
right.
going to get some boos and some criticism and some tough talk. I just definitely have to push back against that being the worst place for him to go as far as scrutiny goes, because New York, I think, is actually worse. I don't know how good Sam Darnold could possibly be, but good Lord, you're talking about never getting a chance. And he also had no weapons to throw to either, let's be fair.
It's close.
So, yeah, if I wasn't a Bears fan, I would be definitely skeptical about the whole thing.
Well, that's a half hour on your boy there. So, I mean, we got it out of the way. You're excited.
Were you able to do the small homework assignment that I gave you about what ESPN was doing, putting Tim Tebow on the air as an analyst for Trevor Lawrence? what kind of comparisons could that possibly bring when you bring on someone as universally god-awful at quarterback as Tim Tebow to analyze the number one pick in the draft?
I was gonna say, if the NFL Network, in honor of his retirement, if they were gonna bring on Sean Lee to talk about health and conditioning.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's real good. Yeah. I had a whole list because I was just my mouth dropped when I saw that Espen was having a segment on Tim Tebow about the mechanics of Trevor Lawrence and breaking down everything about the quarterback.
Well,
players. And
aren't
like,
they
going to
be playing together now?
the new tight end. I don't think he's going to make the team. But
tell you what, not the worst idea I've heard. I think if Tim Tebow had swallowed his pride 10 years ago, roughly, or whenever, you know, because he's not that old. Was he 30?
Early 30s, 32.
Yeah, so 10 years ago, let's say, if he had swallowed his pride and decided that he was going to dedicate himself to being a tight end or an H-back or what everybody was looking at and saw was the talent. Because, you know, he had all the skills, just can't throw a football. You have all the quarterback skills, you have the leadership, you have all those things, you're a good teammate, but you just cannot complete the act of throwing a football. I think he could have had himself a fine career as a tight end if he had just dedicated himself to that. And that was even talked about back then, but that was – no, he was completely sold on the fact of being a quarterback. It didn't help that Josh McDaniels pumped that into his head. Didn't help that he went and won that playoff game. You know, and that they had all the miracle comebacks when he was with Denver. So Tim Tebow might have actually been the originator of Dak time. Because nobody could play. I mean, can you think of anybody more than Tebow who would play three absolute garbage quarters of football just to pull it all around and go 7-for-7 in the fourth quarter and win the game?
And the ugliest 7-for-7 you could possibly imagine, too. That was the thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, at least Dak, when he finally turns it on in the fourth quarter, plays good football, actually plays the position of quarterback.
Yeah. He could complete a throwing motion without people going, ooh.
Without people cringing.
Without you actually hearing, like, gears creaking. Sounds like Tim Tebow, if you would, like, do some audio sampling of, like, a creaky gate over Tim Tebow's throwing motion, that would be about accurate. But, yeah, I'm not the guy I would bring in to break down Trevor Lawrence.
Refused to be anything other than the quarterback. Yeah, everyone talked about him moving to tight end, or I said running back. I thought he would make a perfect
H-back,
goal line smasher guy. Yeah, that's what I would have done with him for sure back
where
then.
There's early
20s. He's 32 now. So
there's a reason why we call Taysom Hill Taysom Tebow, right? Tim Tebow was basically just 10 years ahead of his time. Sean Payton would have loved a, you know, 10 years younger version of Tim Tebow as his sort of gadget guy, right?
And the throws are almost as ugly with Taysom Hill. He actually, of course, a decent one every now and then, unlike Tebow. But yeah, very, very similar. Just big guys who could really do some damage for you with the ball in his hand. You just don't want him throwing the ball away from his hands. Just keep the ball in your hands, son. And that's where you do the most damage for your team. Because once you release the ball, now you're doing damage against your team. That's why we don't want you releasing the ball.
Right. And Taysom Hill will fumble every third time he rushes with the football.
Correct.
Where Tim Tebow at least had ball security skills. So.
Yeah, Tebow analyzing Trevor Lawrence at quarterback, for me, that's, as I texted you, my initial reaction was that's basically, if you want to find someone to have a seminar on how to run a daycare center, you wouldn't want to bring in Jared from Subway. That's about the equivalent of ESPN bringing in Tim Tebow.
That's like Bill Cosby conducting a sleep study.
Oh. Hey, you stole one of mine. That's like a treating women with respect and dignity seminar by Kaz and Mike Tyson. you don't want that. You don't want a seminar on organizational structure from Donald Trump. You don't want that. You don't want something about the nuclear family dynamics and the structure of family by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. You don't want that. You don't want a seminar on how to love and accept your true self by Caitlyn Jenner. That would definitely be the wrong choice. You don't want a seminar on keeping your employees happy and motivated by the entire management team of the Green Bay Packers. That would be the wrong people to bring in on how to keep your employees happy. And last but not least for me was be the obvious. You don't want a seminar on how to monetize a podcast by us. You definitely would not want us coming in to show you
$20 check cleared.
How long ago was that? It was about 3 years ago.
Like 4 years ago. We're working on our second 20. Come on.
Any day now. It's coming.
That's right. Checks in the mail.
So you did get to watch most of
NFL
Network.
Yep, all first night.
And I watched the ESPN. Your initial thoughts of the NFL Network product, which is the product I've been watching all these years because
we've considered it vastly superior over the years. I found it boring.
Oh, like the Bears' offense.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah, exactly. He said it was boring. No, it wasn't the Rich Eisen's kind of getting a little Berman-y for me as far as the shtick. He's definitely believing his own hype. Daniel Jeremiah he has at least a resume as an NFL scout, unlike Mel Kiper, right? Because you can always pull the Bill Irsay thing, I believe, ripping on it. They were playing that on YouTube in honor of Mel Kiper on draft day because it was all on this day, where they ripped on Mel. Who the hell is Mel Kiper anyway? So at least he's got that. But, yeah, Daniel Jeremiah doesn't really move the needle for me. Charles Davis is okay. I prefer Lewis Riddick. So I found myself like, I'd rather actually hear, because now that Mayock is gone, it was sad because they actually were interviewing Mayock today on NFL Network about the Raiders draft. And Mayock just rolled right into TV mode, and I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, he's all cliches now?
I missed him into the booth. I missed him on that booth. They actually were like, and then Eisen's like, well, our booth put together an homage to you, so they played it, and it was him just ripping all the year that they had the zoo animal.
Uh-huh. I was watching.
And they literally were just playing all the clips of him, like, if that thing comes back to the zoo one more time, I'm out of here. And I think he meant it.
I believe we
talked about it on that show about how we liked the cranky Mike Mayock. Yeah. So
nothing.
And then they had another coach. I think his name was Shaw.
Yes, David Shaw from
California.
The only thing,
what he was saying was really good, but he was so distracting because he had I don't know if he has like some thing going with his hand, but he was like his hands wouldn't stop moving. It was like Al Pomonte, but worse. I mean, who gets that reference? You email the show if you get that one.
Yeah, of a certain age from Chicago, basically.
Yes, you get the Al Pomonte reference, but I'm accurate on that. if there was a drinking game related to the NFL Network broadcast where you had to take a drink every time Rich Eisen said the word vaccine, vax, or fully vaccinated, you'd have been drunk about 45 minutes into the show. It was propaganda after a while. It felt so shoehorned into the broadcast that he was clearly working from a script. Like, he's being given the message that he needs to be pumping up, pushing the vaccine. You could definitely get that sense because it did not feel natural in the broadcast. And I even had people I was talking to at work today who were bringing it up to me without me prompting them bringing that up. So I wasn't the only person who noticed it.
On the ESPN side, they had their own version of that, absolutely. There was a vaccinated fans section in Cleveland. I don't know if they were showing that on the camera on NFL Network.
Okay.
But there was a section of fans that I guess were all vaccinated. Some of them had stickers indicating that. And they got a graphic and everything before the first commercial break once the pre-draft coverage began. They got the cameras on them. They got the show out for everybody. And Greeny, Mike Greenberg assured us that the tone for the evening, if you would take a drink every time you heard this, would be, quote, safe and celebratory, unquote. And he must have said that no less than another five or six times during the broadcast.
After the year that we just lived through, it only would have been capped if he called it mostly peaceful.
all the celebrations were mostly peaceful, except for those. No, I think you guys call this virtue signaling when you're up there with vaccinated fans and talking about safe and celebratory and all that.
I actually, on NFL Network, I moved past virtue signaling all the way to propaganda. It was the Fox NFL Network guys sitting on the aircraft carrier after Colin Kaepernick took the knee. It was that.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Yeah.
We love the military.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll be back.
It was that level. For me.
Yeah. No, it was that level
for
me.
It felt so unnatural. Like, you could, okay, after the first time,
mm-hmm.
okay, I see what he said. And after the second time, it's like, okay, when they actually start cutting to the war rooms for teams, and Rich Eisen would go, we're now cutting to the fully vaccinated Cleveland Browns war room. And then the graphics started to mirror that. Then
oh,
the
dear.
Graphics were, I was like, okay, is fully vaccinated like the name of a brand? Because this is ingenious. Like, if you're starting up a business and
yeah.
you're pumping a lot of money into your advertising and you named the business fully vaccinated, it was that level. It was almost like it was brought to you by.
Brought to you by.
Pfizer.
Fully vaccinated.
Yeah. I am shocked that all the commercials that aired during the first night of the draft weren't Johnson & Johnson and. You know,
Moderna
and Pfizer and Moderna. Yeah, it was okay, guys, we get it. And then it just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And it
yeah,
became
it was,
distracting.
I agree. It was pandering.
Okay.
For sure.
So you saw it too. As somebody who's,
yeah,
you are the fully vaccinated half of this show, right?
I am.
Which you don't, you haven't said it. We're 41 minutes into the show. If this was the NFL draft, you would have reminded me of that 12 times by now.
Well, if I was employed by the league, like ESPN, NFL Network guys, Roger Goodell would have had my phone blowing up and constantly trying to remind me to let the world know that I am indeed
fully
vaccinated.
Yeah, or double vaxxed, I believe, at one point was what
yeah.
Rich Eisen called it. Like, it was so bad. It took me out of the moment. It really did. It took me out of the draft a few times.
Well, you'll, I guess, be glad to know that you weren't alone because ESPN was equally as nauseating with that.
So if it's that bad on both networks, it makes sense that it felt shoehorned in because that's clearly people operating on marching orders.
That's clearly the league saying you got to let everyone know that we're doing it the right way and we're safe and safe and celebratory. So
when I say propaganda, I wasn't too far off. It was propaganda. It was league propaganda.
It was 100% league propaganda.
Yeah, and we know there's money going. We know that the companies making these things, there is money changing hands with the NFL.
I don't know if the companies, the drug companies, had anything to do with it. I think the league was taking on criticism for the way that it did things last year, having some fans in, some
right.
fans out, and the optics of having these screaming fans with their masks down. They got masks, but they're down around their chin, and they're
right.
screaming and spitting at each other. And so I think that's just them trying to take the steam out of the criticism that they knew they were going to get by having all these people there for the draft and trying to let everybody know, hey, we're doing it the right way. We're safe. If there's a breakout here, if it's a super spreader event, it's not our fault because we were, quote-unquote, safe and celebratory.
And fully
vaccinated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that was my takeaway. That's sad because outside of that taking me out of the evening, the actual booth, you know, the four guys, and then they would cut away to Kurt Warner and mm-hmm. Some college quarterback who I don't remember his name, but I never remember him playing in the NFL, but he's an analyst. And then that would be when they would talk about quarterbacks and stuff. And it was just, it's Kurt Warner. It's not very, Kurt Warner, he does all right on some game. He does some of the radio commentary on games. So as the color guy, he does okay. His booth segments are pretty weak. So.
Yeah, the guys on the desk for ESPN weren't too much better for me. It was Greeny, and I hadn't heard Mike Greenberg, I guess, in a long time, in years.
Sure.
I don't watch his show, the show that he screwed Golic up the ass to get his own show and get Golic out of there. I don't watch the show. I don't really respect Greeny anymore. So I hadn't heard him in a while, and I was looking down at something when the pre-show started. So I heard his voice. I wasn't looking at him, And God, he sounds old now. The moment I heard his voice, I shot my head and was like, whose grandpa is that? Oh, that's Green. Gee, that's Greeny. Wow. He, Father Time's undefeated, so he's sounding pretty ancient these days. But, yeah, the crew for Espen was Greeny, Mel Kiper, Booger McFarland, your boy, your favorite, and Louis Riddick. And you get one guess as to which one of those didn't sound like a breathless schoolgirl at a Backstreet Boys concert when they started coming in.
I would say Louis Riddick, because he's probably the thing I missed the most about having to watch the ESP. Like, there were moments I was watching these picks and thinking, I'd rather be hearing Louis Riddick breaking these down, because he's got the cranky Mike Mayock thing working. Like, he'll let you know if it's a bad pick.
He will, but he's nowhere near Mayock's level. He's got 15 more years of crust before he gets to the Mayock level.
So I've appreciated and thought that the NFL Network crew was vastly superior in the past, it's kind of a push for me now. You're just hearing what you're saying, you know, I mean, Kiper's obviously shtick at this point, right? Did they wheel out Chris Mortensen?
Unfortunately.
Oh, that was a sad segment 3 years ago.
It's not any better. They came on, Shefty and Mort came on at one point to yap about the Aaron Rodgers situation, and it didn't, Mort actually held up better than I thought he would, but yeah,
okay.
Every time he starts to speak, it's like, it's still cringy.
This is getting to be like elder abuse now. Why are you wheeling out Mort? I know he's the OG, right? He is the guy that all of these insiders owe everything to. All the Jay Glazers and Adam Schefters, right? Mort was the first.
This is just another PC police, another sort of virtue signaling situation. They don't want to just boot him right off because of the fact that he got strokes and sounds like that and looks like that. They don't want to they don't want to take the heat for doing that, so they're going to keep him on there no matter how uncomfortable it makes everybody feel.
But if you're watching that thinking this guy needs a sippy cup, you probably need to be sheltering him from. And that was 3 years ago that I thought
I understand
that.
I understand he might want to do it really bad, but yeah, someone's got to be the big boy and say, no, we can't do that.
Right. Just, like I said, all these guys who are doing it now, all these insider guys, they've got it made, you know, because you think about when Mort was doing it like pre-internet, right? He was, and he would actually be dropping useful things that nobody else was dropping. Where now it's just a race for all these sort of quote-unquote insider guys to try to get access and have their guys. And it's like, no. Mort was, Mort, a lot of respect for Chris Mortensen, but put him to pasture, guys. Put him to pasture.
He's doing it back in the Will McDonough days. That's going way back.
I did it better, you know?
He
should be in the Hall of Fame as far as I'm concerned.
All props to Mort, no doubt. But yeah, it's time. And his tidbit that he was trying to spit out was that the Raiders were conversations about the Aaron Rodgers deal, and he said they took themselves out of it because they don't have the money. And not reflecting on Mort at all, but my reaction to that was, don't you make the room and find the money for the MVP for the reigning defending league most valuable player? I don't understand how. Again, it's the Raiders. That this is kind of what they do. But how do you embarrass yourself and your fan base by having a reporter, no matter how decrepit he may be, go on national television and tell the world that you would be in talks to trade for the league's most valuable player, but you don't have the money? Like, how can you say that with a straight face? I don't understand. Anyway, so the crew that was up there, and you were talking about how you sort of devalued a little bit the NFL Network crew now that you got a taste of them. And similarly, me having my first look at the ESPN crew in a long time, I don't know when they made the moves to bring – I know Greeny, this is his first year, and I think this is Booger, his first year up there, because, of course, they were trying to put him in the booth as an analyst, and that didn't work out.
Right.
I don't know how long Riddick's been up there, but I was on the other side similarly thinking this isn't so bad. Greeny was not bad in his role because he definitely turned down the Chris Berman like shtick. He definitely cut out a lot of the jokes and the attempts at puns and stuff. He still had a few in there, but for the most part, he tried to play the straight guy, just the host, just directing traffic and making sure they got in and out of their breaks and all of that. And when he kept it to just that, he was fine. He was perfectly fine. You know, just he sounded old, that's all. But they really seemed to try to have a more professional overall presentation of the draft. This is what I was, you know, dreading about watching the ESPN version of the draft is compared to NFL Network, I thought of ESPN as more cartoonish, more circusy, and trying to do a lot. And it wasn't that way. It was a little bit early on, like I said, when those first, you know, 5 or 10 picks or so, that they were just fawning all over each and every one of them, the way they sucked and filleted each and every one of those guys and made it seem like they were all the greatest things and sounded like they were their agents. And that was, you know, fangirlish. So that was a little off-putting, especially with Booger McFarlane. And I'm like, dude, why are you going this crazy? Especially over quarterbacks. Like, you know anything about quarterback play. Who are you trying to fool? But overall, once they got past all of that and just got into straight breaking down the players and what they're good at and who they remind them of, I really actually don't have a complaint about the ESPN telecast after they got past the initial first few guys.
I would go so far as to say, and I haven't said this in many years, if I win the March Madness next year, it might not just be an automatic that you, the loser, you would get ESPN. I would actually have to think about it.
See, that's an upgrade. That's progress. That
it
reflects
is,
very
it
well
be,
on ESPN.
It used to be we would suffer through the ESPN. I mean, I suffered through some ESPN years, and you didn't, and you were able watching the other, you know, and I just think with the subtractions from that NFL desk, and some of the changes they've made at ESPN, it sounds like, you know, that they're reaching more of a middle point now. And this year, I think the whole vaccine thing was just like, oh, I can't take this. So I was wondering if it was the same way on the other side. The answer is clearly yes, it was the same way on the other side. So
absolutely, and we won't have to deal with it next year. I don't believe anyway.
Well, how about 52 minutes into the show, we start actually talking about the draft.
Oh, sure. Well, I still wanted to get to before the draft. Talking about the singing and the concerts and all of that. They had a PA announcer and a runway for some of the players to get introduced before the draft even started. They had a band. They had
they actually stopped the draft for Sweet Caroline. You saw that part, right? I mean, that was pretty late in the night. But Roger Goodell actually walked up, and he had the pick. And he's like, no, let him keep playing.
Right.
Because the crowd was into it. I was just like, okay, I get that. He's playing the room. Now, he didn't sing along. I think that would have probably – the room probably would have totally popped at that point.
Yeah, I don't imagine you're ever going to see Goodell singing along to, you know, to anything. That's asking a little much. But he sure does like the crowd jeering him and reacting to him and booing him. He sure does like playing the WWE villain role.
I think he plays into it. I'm surprised he didn't give him a little more. I'd have been up there like, oh, is that all you got? You know, I'd have been egging him on even more.
I think he said something to that effect in previous years, when the hatred of him was the greatest. You know, back in
they were booing Tagliabue.
Yeah,
right.
Tagliabue
was
just, you know,
he
was just
generally
laughed it
off. Not a reviled commissioner.
No, but what they give to Goodell is much worse than what they gave to the Tag.
All the players love him. They all want to run up and hug him and.
Yeah, because they're not in the league yet.
Wait till the first time he
suspends them for, you know, marijuana or something stupid like that. But yeah, they had the WWE-like entrance with the players coming up before they've even gotten drafted. They had a kids choir perform the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. And at that point, I'm like, okay, really? We're doing that? Then they get the role Ann Wilson from Heart out there to sing the actual national anthem and presenting the flags. And I'm like, wait, we're still watching the draft, right? This is all for the,
yeah.
You thought they were getting ready to play the damn Super Bowl the way they were rolling the pomps and circumstance out there. And as far as the bands and the Kings of Leon, you got a has-been rock group up there before the draft begins. And I think all of that was they're in Cleveland, and they, because I know on the ESPN broadcast, that was another thing.
Yeah.
Take a drink again for Greeny every time he mentioned that they were in the shadow of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they were looking at all the legends of music up there on the stage, and they had the Isley Brothers introduce the Dolphins draft pick for some reason. I'm like, okay. So I think that's what that music, I think the music was trying to tie into Cleveland and make Cleveland feel good that they were, you know, they were doing a draft there in Cleveland. I think that's what all that was about. I don't think they'll have rock bands up there next year at the draft in Vegas, although it's Vegas, so it might be even worse. They might have Elvis impersonators and showgirls and everything.
It was, yeah, they definitely were going with the music angle. The house band was an interesting addition. And the music, I didn't.
It's a party.
I'm crotchety. I'm old. I liked my Saturday morning 9 a.m. all day draft.
That's over. Get over it. It's over.
The 15 minutes between picks that first round took, you know, 7 hours. I miss those days. I miss the days of the Vikings forgetting to make their pick.
Every year.
Two or three years in a row.
What
and then
the
all the teams behind them running up to the podium. Right?
Yeah.
Like, literally, all the teams behind the Vikings just rushing up there because they could pick one ahead of them. And the Vikings just kept falling and falling. I think one year they fell, like, 3 spots because 3 teams actually got their pick in before the Vikings recovered.
Sad.
So, yeah, the good old days.
Definitely the good old days. So, yeah, as far as the actual draft goes, so the obvious, you know, number one for the Jaguars with Trevor Lawrence, nothing wrong with that. The camera at the Lawrence's home kept putting, as far as the ESPN version of it, I don't know if the NFL Network was different, but they kept putting his woman, girlfriend, wife, whatever she was, they kept putting him right in the shot with him next to him. They weren't cutting her off at all. They weren't doing the side thing. It was like right there, 1-2 next to each other. And you don't do that unless the girl's hot, and she was. So I understand why they did that. And so Lawrence is announced as Jacksonville's first pick, and the telecast starts it at what, 7 Central Time, 8 Eastern?
That pick had to have been made at 7:30.
26 minutes past the hour. 7:26 Central Time.
That pick should have been made at 7:02.
That's too damn long. I understand
stringing
it out and all that.
The Jaguars took almost their whole time.
But we always wondered, did they take their whole time, or did they make the pick in the league? Took their whole time announcing it. We never really know.
They're stretching the show. I don't know. It's possible.
There.
Yeah, it's possible that they ran that for 8 minutes before they were like, yeah, all right.
I think
anything,
you're
just
that out.
Giving the Jets more time, and the Jets already knew who they were picking. So probably the least exciting 1-2.
Right.
That we've had.
So,
and then,
you know, Zach Wilson goes to the Jets, and Mel said of him that he would have kept Sam Darnold if he were the Jets and all of his ghosts.
Wow.
He would have actually held on to Sam Darnold instead of drafting Zach Wilson, because I guess that's what he basically, I think he thinks Sam Darnold got a bit of a raw deal there.
I see dead people.
So I don't think he's saying that he necessarily thinks Zach Wilson is worse than Sam Darnold. He's just saying you didn't give Sam Darnold the fairest of chances that you could have, and you're already getting rid of him and bringing in the new guy, and you could have just stuck with Sam Darnold instead of having to do that. And he's probably right about that. I know we both saw flashes in Darnold at times that he showed some ability at the quarterback position. Always had to consider
the first year, the rookie year, when he had Robbie Anderson and he actually had some weapons, and then that cupboard was totally bare. I mean, I know that offense looked marginally better with Joe Flacco, but that's also because you've got a 15-year probably almost NFL vet, you know, helming the team, who's, you know, he's going to be a little bit more sound with the decision making. And it's not like the Jets were playing great. They played great enough to get play out of the number one pick, though.
That's right. They played great enough to not be able to take Trevor Lawrence, unfortunately for them.
So, yeah, do I think that Sam Darnold didn't get the fairest of shakes in New York? Yes. But the system now allows you to swing big and miss on a quarterback and, again, not set your franchise back for a decade.
Right,
you can
they
do
can
this.
Recycle
you
like
can,
that.
You can retool. If you don't think you've got the guy, the Bears just did it.
Oh, God. Can you imagine if they were stuck with Trubisky for $100 million? Oh,
he was a bonus Lord. Baby.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah, I don't get it. And then you go and you see that the Jets made a lot of moves in free agency. They obviously were drafting around this Zach Wilson pick, which makes you wonder what could they have just done at two. Could they have traded out at two, acquired a ton more picks, kept Sam Darnold, and just made their team better?
Yeah, that's kind of what Mel was saying. He also was looking at Wilson's schedule at BYU, and I like this line. He said the schedule sent sugar levels through the roof because of all the cupcakes that he was feasting on. So clearly, Mel
wasn't
been too highly
of Zach. Most of the tapes that they played on Zach Wilson were more from his pro day than they were actual game film.
Yeah, that's probably not.
It was just big arm. It was Josh Allen all over again. So I'm wondering if maybe Zach Wilson's a bit of a project.
Oh. Yeah, now the Jets get their own project to work on.
I think that was the vibe I was getting. It's like everybody was just talking like it's a Jeff George, they're just falling in love with the big arm.
Oh dear God.
I don't think he's got the baggage that Jeff George had, but Jeff George, probably the strongest arm, one of them I've ever seen.
Well,
he could throw it very far. He wasn't a good quarterback, but he could throw it very far.
You know, Jay Cutler used to get that Jeff George comp with the his arm was strong. It wasn't quite that big,
that was the surliness, I think.
Right, that was the attitude.
Yeah.
But physically, we now have the delineation of big arm project that can work out excellently if you coach him up and put the right talent around him, because we got on one side Jeff George and now we got on the other side Josh Allen. So you definitely good luck, Jets. I hope for your sake that Zach Wilson turns into Josh Allen.
If the Jets are somehow able to trade for Stephon Diggs and John Brown and Cole Beasley, Zach Wilson will be a hell of a quarterback.
Well, they're trying. You see all they're doing to try to help them. And I did see some of those tweets, like Sam Darnold's got to be sitting there going, guys, what? I could have used some of this
help. Which is just beautiful, because who the hell is Sam Darnold throwing to in Carolina? Keenan McCardle?
Steve Smith's coming back out of retirement.
Smith? No, McCardle was a Jaguar.
He was a Jag. Yeah.
Did he ever play for the Panthers?
You know what? He may have. I don't remember. He was definitely well known as a Jag. Him and
as
Jimmy
a Jaguar.
Smith.
Yeah, Jimmy Smith. Yeah, that was that tandem. No, yeah, Steve Smith isn't walking through that door.
Well,
I think Steve Smith might be one of the only good Panthers receivers. Even when Cam Newton took them to the Super Bowl, he had no receivers.
No, he had a bunch of guys.
Yeah. So good luck, Sam Darnold. Mike Davis just left town too, so now you got guys. And Christian McCaffrey, maybe.
Hopefully.
Maybe.
If he can stay healthy. So next is the Niners giving up that haul of draft picks to get up to three for Kyle Shanahan to grab Trey Lance. And they hope he won't follow the steps of fellow North Dakota State quarterback Carson Wentz. Oh, they hope he doesn't go down that hole.
Yeah, this is, you know, Kyle Shanahan, though, he seems to have the pixie dust with quarterbacks. They're awfully quick to give up on Garoppolo.
I think you could tell there were some times where he was just through with him. Like
I think they were through with him when he overthrew Emmanuel Sanders at the end of that Super Bowl. I think that was the moment. If you could see a franchise's trust literally be a physical thing that broke, it was the how you overthrew a wide open Emmanuel Sanders streaking up the seam in the Super Bowl that would have probably won the game for you.
Yeah, that gives him the lead, right?
Yes.
Yep.
And horribly overthrew him.
Yes. By
I think that was the moment. If I could pin it down to a moment, I'm going to go with that one.
There were a few moments that Garoppolo, I think Shanahan might be one of those guys that he kind of demands like that perfection. So very similar to Sean McVay. I think there were moments there clearly McVay had enough of
Jared. Yeah, that's a good comp.
Yeah, he had enough of golf. Like, I can't. When you got a undrafted or whatever that backup was that basically they were going to play him over.
Wofford or Wolford?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the guy.
But they were itching to play. Like, they were mad when he got hurt in that game.
In a playoff game, they were going to use him over Jared Goff. I think that clearly he was through with Jared Goff.
Again, just in a Super Bowl a few seasons ago, one of the worst Super Bowls I've ever seen.
Oof.
But in a Super Bowl nonetheless. So now, as soon as Trey Lance gets drafted, immediately you start seeing the reports. I at least kept seeing them on NFL Network that the Niners are like, no. We're still starting the season with Jimmy G. We're not getting rid of him automatically. So they're already putting that out there that Lance might be a buy and hold kind of guy.
I put that on the same level as the Packers claiming that they're going to keep Aaron Rodgers. That guys say things that doesn't mean they're true at all. I think you say it because it's what else are you going to say at this moment? Like, you have no leverage. So
you have no choice.
You just say, no, we're going to hold on to this guy and we're going to, I'll take what little money I got and put it on Rodgers will not be in Green Bay when football starts in September, and Garoppolo will not be in San Francisco. I got the daily double on both of those.
All right. So where do you see Rodgers?
I wouldn't have an educated guess if he didn't have a list out there, because there's so many teams that could just use him. Pretty much any team that hasn't drafted a young quarterback.
28 teams that would literally change right now if they could.
Right. So I would be like, anyone could, use him, obviously. But he got his list floated out there at some point that it was basically, was it Niners, Broncos, Raiders?
Yeah, I believe
one of those three.
List. Yeah.
And if I had to pick one of the three, I think I'd say I think I'd say Broncos, only because the Niners were drafting this kid. Is kind of the same situation as Green Bay drafting Jordan Love, is you got an obvious kid there that they want to play, and I don't think he wants to be in that situation where the first misstep that he takes, you're looking over his shoulder and going, hey, we got this kid over here. You don't have that situation in Denver, because Drew Lock is a bust, basically.
All right.
And organizationally, obviously take them over, the Raiders, certainly a much better organization, better defense. So that, if I had to guess, I think Rodgers is going to be a Bronco.
Okay.
So as far as Trey Lance to San Fran, Booger and Riddick sold him so hard when he got picked, before the pick was even made, because, at that point it was still a bit of
Lance
a mystery.
Lance or Fields.
No, it was him or Mac Jones.
Mac Jones, which I did not get, because I didn't get the Mac Jones love. I didn't think Mac Jones was that good.
Some of the, I guess, people I was reading social media-wise did a good job of selling that in the days leading up to the draft, that Mac Jones was a better fit for what Kyle Shanahan would want. He would run the offense. He would actually do the things that Shanahan would want him to do. Whereas Trey Lance, the athlete, the guy that can run around and make plays, but not necessarily be the guy that would, run the offense. So that was the narrative with that.
I'm starting to get this. I'm starting to get this comp between Alabama quarterbacks and Wisconsin running backs.
Hmm.
That, like when they were doing the comp last year, they were doing the issue where you were talking about, you had Jalen Hurts, and then Tua, and then you have Mac Jones, and you just look at all the first round receivers that these guys have played with.
A lot of talent.
who've all produced. Right?
A lot of Uber talent.
Yeah, so I'm starting to wonder, because you have Jalen Waddle, and you have the MVP, you have Devontae Smith, and you had, oh my God, who are these other ones these last few years? It was just, the list was insane.
There's so many, I forgot too, but there's a lot of them.
And it was just, it kept going and going, and it's like, this is going back a ways, it's like all this first round talent. Was Henry Ruggs one of them?
Yeah, I think he was.
So, yeah, it was just ridiculous. We were talking about that last year about Tua, about was it really him? Or was it that we just go through the list of all this first-round wide receiver talent that he's throwing the ball to? We're like, maybe he's a product of the system more than anything else. So I wasn't all that sold on Mac Jones, because that's the thing with Wisconsin running backs, right? They all get to run behind – they basically get to run behind an NFL offensive line.
Pretty much.
So – Well, I'm interested. Yeah, we'll see on Mac Jones. But we get to him.
But, yeah, the way the Booger and Lewis Riddick were selling Trey Lance, that, to me, smacked a little bit of they really love this kid. He's, you know, he's black. They're trying to, you know, pump him up as – because Riddick kept going on about his character, and now he – not only is a great football player, great athlete, but there is no better person in the draft. And I'm like, okay, they laid it on thick for sure. I thought they were trying to represent him. It was so thick. But, you know, when you fall in love with a guy, you fall in love with a guy and whatnot. And then as far as his tape goes, you know, he buried some DBs on some designed runs in that highlight package, which is awesome in North Dakota. This ain't North Dakota.
That's correct.
You try that with some of these safeties up here, you're going to be sitting on the sideline for 4 weeks with a separated shoulder. So I'm not, you know, saying that he's going to get knocked out or I'm not, you know, trying to wish any ill will on him. But I'm just saying some of that talent and some of those plays that showed up on the tape, that's great, you know, up there in North Dakota. But you got to come a little different than that. It reminds you of the some of the tape that you saw on Johnny Football and some of the plays that he's making. Is like, okay, that's cute, but that's not going to work in the NFL.
Because the Johnny Manziel plays were all lucky. The Johnny Manziel plays were all him running around and then heaving a bomb, basically a 50-50 ball that his receiver fought for and came down with. That was every highlight of Johnny Manziel.
The ones that were
– YOLO balls, that's all it was.
No, the plays where he would make plays and score with his feet were all like he's hurdling linemen trying to make juke moves in the open field. And it's like, you can't do that to, you know, Marcus Humphrey or somebody.
You gotta be special. You gotta be, to pull that in the NFL, you gotta be Lamar Jackson or Michael Vick or Steve Young in his younger days, right? Before, you know, because he would run a lot. He had no moves, but he's got guys to miss. He's very elusive.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, you got to be on a different level if you're going to take that from college to the pros.
Yeah, we'll see.
The fact that we can probably mention guys who are that special on one hand, I don't think you saw that. You didn't get the wow from Trey Lance when you were watching that, did you?
No, I got the okay. That's nice. That's cute. That's real good. You know,
that'll
for
work
his
against,
surroundings.
That'll work against University of Minnesota at St. Cloud or something like that. You know.
Yeah, I get
Fargo
State and all them. Yeah. Okay, Atlanta at 4. Go ahead. Your guy. Go off.
So yeah, although talk. I was not sold on them taking Fields at 4 because I did not think it was. I didn't get the sense that this was one that they monetarily were ready to move on from Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan, you know, if they think they're going to be so terrible with Matt Ryan, well, then just, you know, be terrible and draft again, you know. So I don't think that they had a reason to jump up and take the quarterback at 4. I think Arthur Smith, we know he can pull some interesting things. Look what he got out of Ryan Tannehill, right? Matt Ryan is a much better professional than I would say even than Ryan Tannehill. Even though I've got my problems with Matt Ryan, I mean, he was still Nobody. He's the GOAT of taking sacks on third down. The GOAT. And the GOAT of soul-crushing turnovers late in games. But still, he's still a serviceable, at this point in his career, a good NFL quarterback with a ton of weapons. So I was either saying trade out. I thought somebody was going to lose their shit and jump up to four to get a quarterback. And then if they didn't, I had no problem with them taking Kyle Pitts. I mean, when I was listening to the breakdown on Pitts, I basically came away like the Daniel Jeremiah one was like, he's uncoverable. You can't cover him with a safety, a corner, or a linebacker.
That makes him pretty good.
That makes him uncoverable, right? Who's left?
The coach. Coach run out there and cover him?
I don't think you're covered. You're not going to cover him with the nose tackle. So he's too big. He's too big and physical to get covered by corners and safeties, and he's too elusive and fast for linebackers. I was like, that sounds good to me. So if they've got him, and then a lot of what I was hearing was that a lot of the scouts had him as either the first or the second best player on the board.
Man,
it was either Pitts, then Trevor Lawrence, or Trevor Lawrence and then Pitts. It was literally that, as far as like talent and production and ability. So I'll take it. I mean, if he slots in as a tight end, but he's really not, and he can, you know, if he becomes the Julio Jones successor, because Julio's rumored to either be on the move or, you know, but he's getting older and he's injury prone. So I had no problem doing that and trying to work him in with this Arthur Smith offense, which I'm assuming is going to be just like what he had in Tennessee. A lot of play action. I mean, this is the perfect guy if you're going to try to run play action. A matchup nightmare, get down into the red zone, and you guys still got to score a ton of points in this league. So Atlanta might not be any good, but it'll be fun.
That's all you can hope for. If you're going to be bad, at least be fun bad, right?
Be fun bad. Be the Cardinals.
Sure. Slight pushback on Arthur Smith, being familiar with his work here in Tennessee. Yes, he did. He did a ton of excellent stuff with Ryan Tannehill. He unlocked Tannehill and he found a way to get the best out of his skill set. That's all true. He also did that with this guy at running back you may have heard of named Derrick Henry. He doesn't have that anymore. So that's all I'm saying is that the jury is still out as to how exactly great Arthur Smith will be working with an offense that doesn't have Derrick Henry in the backfield. Not saying it's not going to work, but just saying that the jury is out.
In defense of not just so much Arthur Smith, but in defense of Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's been in the league, I believe, this will be 14 years now. Been a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you believe he's in his 14th season, probably going into his 14th season? This is his first offensive-minded head coach.
Yeah.
Sit on that one for a minute, right? I mean, the first head coach that he has had, and he's probably having a Hall of Fame career. This will be the first head coach that he has had who has had an offensive slant, which is insane. I mean, we're talking about some you know, Dan Quinn and, oh God, Mike Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see what this offense could look like. Obviously their problem is, you know, now once you got that pick taken care of, they went very heavy defense after that, which they should.
Right. Yes, absolutely. and Booger and Lewis Riddick for Kyle Pitts were carping for him as well. They kept pointing out that if this guy really is the uncoverable target that they say he is, then when his contract comes up, he's not going to be wanting to be paid like a tight end. He's going to say, hey, look, I'm basically the wide receiver. Let's pay me like that. So something to keep an eye on. But yeah,
he produces like that, I'm fine with that.
I knew he was highly regarded. I knew he was highly rated. I didn't know he was that highly rated that he may have been like the second best player in the draft, if not for all the love.
I'm on Yahoo. I have my Yahoo up. I have Yahoo Sports up because it tends to be the least like intrusive with ads. He is the number two player on their board.
Okay.
So that's interesting.
So best of luck to Atlanta for getting that kid. Looks like he's going to be definitely someone to watch. Cincinnati needed to protect Joe Burrow, who got smashed up his rookie year. And
so they draft
they
a wide receiver.
And they don't do that. They take.
I hope he can block.
Jamar Chase, the LSU wide receiver. I wonder if they do that if it wasn't a personal situation as far as Burrow played at LSU with Jamar Chase. I wonder if that connection. If that connection isn't there, if they do that or not.
Well, he's definitely got himself a hype man for when he's in rehab after he gets destroyed again.
Yeah, they can commiserate, I guess. Jamar Chase wearing shades indoors, so he thinks he's a star already. So, you know, he's one of those. He's one of those diva wide receivers, so maybe he'll be that good. I hope for Burrow's sake he is. Yeah, I think they would have gotten O-line if Burrow didn't play with Jamar Chase. That's just my – there's no way to ever prove that. But that's just my
after what you just watched happen to your franchise, you know, quote-unquote franchise quarterback, and Joe Burrow played well for a garbage team.
Mm-hmm.
And this is – you reward him by going – getting him a wide receiver?
I mean, they need weapons, so that's not completely.
Yeah, but
they also need to protect his ass.
A wheelchair.
Correct.
I mean, I guess you could. I don't think they allow that in the NFL. But.
Right, you can, just not in the National Football League. You can do that in the handicap league, but that's not what this
is. Yes, wrong league.
Not yet, anyway.
Which Joe Burrow might be on his way to if they don't get him from some protection.
And if he is, then he can say hi to David Carr. So the Dolphins take Alabama wide receiver Jalen Waddle, who's also wearing shades, so he thinks he's a star as well.
Right.
And, of course, at this point
– it's all about getting the band back together, apparently, this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
apparently, these quarterbacks are all such divas that they got to just have their guys.
It's my guy. Got to get my guy. So Tua and Jalen Waddle. And, of course, you know what's going through my mind at this point with these two receivers that are taken. I'm wondering what the Heisman winner is thinking of all of this. And I'm wondering what he did to piss people off because he's still sitting there.
I heard he's pretty good.
I heard it somewhere. I think you told me. I think you told me you saw him play and he was pretty good.
I did.
He made it impressive.
At least I told you that before he won the Heisman.
This guy that won the Heisman, I saw him play. And you know what?
He's pretty good. No, he jumped off the screen. I'm telling you, I was watching that game. It was like, oh, this guy's good. Oh,
yeah.
That's not my best moment. All right.
No, I'm telling you, that's the essence of what we do. We watch and we see who's good and we point it out and we say, hey, he's good. And, you know, that's all you can do is recognize
apparently
what you see.
Apparently the Bengals and the Dolphins, who both took receivers, did not care for my assessment.
They didn't listen to you. You're not on their payroll. So they didn't listen to your free advice. The massive offensive tackle, Penei Sewell, who the Bengals probably should have taken, goes 7 to the Detroit Lions. It's going to go bite some knees for Dan Campbell. And Booger had to remind me of the ridiculousness that is Dan Campbell, so I had to laugh at that again. I still remember that press conference that Dan Campbell had, and I'm like, this guy does not belong in the NFL as a head coach. This guy is a crazy person. And the other press conference over the off season was whoever the Eagles hired as their new head coach. I don't even remember his name, but he did not also, it wasn't silly like Dan Campbell. It was just, he didn't make any sense. Like everything he said was like, what are you talking about? He just sounded like a space cadet. So that's another one. I don't even know who he is. I'm sure we'll find that out.
It must take a special type to do that job.
Or something. So the first defender off the board is Joe Horn's kid, J.C. Horn. As we start to feel old, all these former players.
Go to the next pick. That's when I felt old.
Patrick Surtain's kid. The Alabama quarterback.
It's not late enough for my kids to be asleep, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching this, and I'm like, I know I'm old. I watched his dad play.
Yeah, we've been around a while. We've been doing this a while.
I thought Trin, cute factor. Trin is she does not hesitate to make old jokes about me. I will give her that.
Well, you know, those, at that age, we certainly made our fair share of jokes about adults as well.
I think we were watching some documentary about, like, the Titanic, and I think we were all sitting there, and she asked me if I remember when it happened or something like that, along those lines. And
it comes with the territory, man. You know that.
Yeah. She learned from...
Hey!
It's kind of stuff I say to my mom. I asked them actually to say that. Hey, next time you guys see Grandma, ask her if she was on the Titanic.
So Joe Horn's kid gets taken physical cornerback. Mel Kiper was shocked at the pick due to Carolina not choosing an offensive line help or wide receiver help for their new quarterback Sam Darnold. So. They're playing mix and match there, trying to figure out who's going to go where. And they were this is one of several draft picks where Kiper actually, like, his slack-jawed shock response was something that Greeny had to point out and say, okay, got to get your reaction, Mel, because you're sitting over there completely shocked at this pick. So Mel, they didn't go the way Mel thought they would in some cases. And like you said, Denver followed at 9 with Pat Surtain. The Alabama cornerback Booger said that he's the most fundamentally sound defender in the whole draft. So that's a good pick for Denver.
That's a Vic Fangio pick, right?
Yes. Yeah. I was just about to mention.
That's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, that's a defensive-minded head coach. He couldn't care less about this. This is the team that played a guy off the street, a quarterback.
Yeah, completely. A wide receiver who happened to play quarterback for like 3 plays in college. Yeah, that's good enough. Go ahead.
Go get him, kid.
Uh-huh. So Dallas deals number 10 to Philly, which is only 2 spots up from where Philly was, so that Philly can get the Heisman winner, the Devontae Smith, the guy who we heard was
which
pretty
good. Which is just hilarious because he's going to be torching the Cowboys for years.
If Jalen Hurts and Devontae can hook up and get that connection going, you know, another Alabama connection. Smith had a massive gold pin on his lapel.
Yeah.
Consisting of his initials. And in the self-aggrandizing jewelry category, that's the winner. I thought that was actually pretty dope. I had never seen someone wearing their own initials as a lapel pin.
That
before.
Is www.thebus36.com level right there.
That was pretty dope. Yeah, that's right up there. That's look at me. That was pretty good.
That website needs to go into the Hall of Fame or Hall of Infamy. Can we put a web? We can put anything we want in the Hall of Infamy. I might have to put
we
a
got
website.
Everything in there. Yeah.
I put a porno movie into the Hall of Infamy. We could absolutely put a website into the Hall of Infamy.
Yeah, why
I like the pick. I heard he's pretty good.
he's not bad. So we're about to run out of time on the live.
And we're
going to
end where we began.
Yeah.
At number 11. Your guy.
With my guy. We'll continue that conversation on the after show. What I wanted to do was play the plugs through the end of the live portion because we no one knows where to find us if they're listening live. No one knows about our podcast, about our Twitter handles, about anything. So if you're wondering how to contact us, how to connect with the show when it's not live, here's a little thing that I've made up for everybody to hear that. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at @IMLDDre and at @IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. All right, so that's just something I wanted to play. We've done all these shows in the off-season, and I don't believe I played our plugs once, just to let everybody know where we are social media-wise on Twitter, where our podcast is located, how to contact us, email us, all that good stuff. So for anybody that was wondering about any of those things, there is all the info for that. So I kind of said all I had to say about Justin Fields. Chicago desperate for QB help, moves up to 11, give up their number one this year and next. Ryan Pace just loves giving up number one draft picks, boy. So he does it again, obviously desperate, takes Justin Fields. But of course he might wind up, after all is said and done, if Green Bay does indeed get rid of Aaron Rodgers, Fields would have a real good shot at being the best damn quarterback in the division, in the NFC North. But I may be a bit unobjective and biased.
With all that stiff competition from Kirk Cousins and Jared Goff,
you can only be better than who's in front of you. You can only beat who's there on the field, right? So your thoughts on Justin Fields? I've said all I was going to say about him.
Yeah, I mean, I did. Like I said, I understand why they did it. The coach and the GM are both fighting for their jobs, right? This is it. This is the. You plant your flag at the top of the hill. This is, you're going to either die on that hill or, you're going to win the day. So I totally understood it. It seems like this is going to be their guy. So now they need to make sure that the pieces are in place. It's a boring offense, which I agreed with that assessment. I'm like, yeah, I think we've said things to that effect. It's supposed to be, Nagy's supposed to be this offensive genius, but we haven't seen the creativity. And he had a mobile quarterback. We'd see flashes of that, but like we pointed out, they'd start off with an idea and like give up. They made the playoffs last year, right? With that offense,
you did.
They made the playoffs, and that defense kept them in that game the whole game against the Saints. And they could muster more than, was it 13? It wasn't very pretty. 7? It was bad.
And 10.
That's right. They got the last touchdown, but then opted not to go for the extra point or whatever. That was the one that would have covered the number for me. So it seems like there was a lack of creativity for a team that's supposed to be an offensive genius. I hope he gets the freedom to be terrible. That's what I worry about. I mean... We've seen this with first-year, highly drafted rookie quarterbacks, Troy Aikman, Peyton Manning. I think the days of letting those guys go out and just be bad their first year because you have to get the immediate reward, like it's boom or bust right away, I think those days are over. They're not going to let these guys have to come in and make an immediate splash, or they just 2 years, like they do the Darnold to you.
And like you've been saying, it's much easier to do that now because you're not – necessarily married or committed financially as much to these high quarterbacks as you were before in the olden days. You can make that decision. And, Mel Kiper thinks that the Jets moved on too quick from Darnold, but
I think that's a little bit more of the old way of thinking like that I might suffer from. It's not the draft and develop days are over.
They might be.
It is draft and produce now. That is it.
Or move on almost instantly. And
if you don't come out and you're Patrick Mahomes, if you don't come out, even Carson Wentz enjoyed a lot of success his first couple of seasons, right?
Got MVP chances. That's how well he was playing.
And look how fast they moved on from him. Look how fast the Bears, obviously for good reason, moved off Trubisky, but that didn't last long. Darnold didn't last long. Jimmy G, I think he still has a ridiculous winning percentage, and they're done.
They're finished with him. Jared Goff, Super Bowl 2 years ago. Get out. Done with you.
So these pack your teams, bags. They lose their shit over the quarterbacks now. The system allows them to. I get it. You draft a bad receiver. I don't think you let J.J. Arcega-Whiteside do what he's done 3 or 4 years before you decide, right?
That's your guy. You love him.
Oh, man. I remember you had him as an X factor.
Ugh.
Or something like that in a game, in a playoff.
Well, he was.
He was a no factor. There's X factors. That's a no. And then when I actually got to the point of looking at the worst rookie in the draft, and I looked at that production, that's some of the worst rookie wide receiver production. And you don't usually expect big rookie wide receiver numbers. His were, he played in every game.
Something for the amount of time they threw at him. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, if you play at that comp at the quarterback position, you don't get a lot of rope anymore. And so Justin Fields has got to come out and make an immediate splash, or 2 years from now, he'll be gone. That's it. I don't agree with him.
Understandable for the...
Yeah, but old guys like me and Mel Kiper don't agree with that.
And understandable for the coaches and management to want to move on quickly, because if they don't, then they're going to wind up getting thrown out along with the quarterback. So they're just trying to get the quarterbacks out of there before they get thrown out.
Right. So if you don't come out and you're not Kyler Murray right away, you're not producing, or at least if you're not Justin Herbert, right, he wasn't even supposed to start.
Or Joe Burrow, just show something. Just show, give some reason why you were drafted. Put something on the tape that makes people go, okay, I see why.
Even Project, his rookie season, wasn't a shit show.
He showed something. He showed some reason.
There were flashes. Yeah, there was we can work with this. So you've at least got to have that. You just can't come out and be awful. Which is why it just blows me away that Baker Mayfield is still so highly regarded.
Even he has flashes. He's just not a number one.
Baker Mayfield is surrounded by the most ridiculously talented team.
Seems to play better the more they get hurt and the less guys that he has to deal with.
Yes. When he had Odell Beckham, he sucked.
Right. But strip him of all his weapons and just make him have to be fundamental? He's not bad.
Okay. He's a guy. He's serviceable, right? I'm just saying.
That's the issue with him is he's not the number one overall quarterback by a long shot.
Correct.
He's
a guy. You take him over Trubisky, right? Okay.
You know what? Trubisky's done. He's over. He's in Buffalo. We're not talking about Trubisky anymore. He's the man.
Mitchell Trubisky would have been an amazing quarterback in the NFL if this was 1983.
They would have loved that athleticism. They would have thought they'd never seen anything like that.
They would have like, what, a 56% completion percentage? You're going to the Hall of Fame, son.
And 70-yard touchdown runs every now and then? Oh, my God. We've never seen anything like it. Wow.
All right. So, that's my take on Justin Fields. He'd better make a quick splash or it's just, too bad, so sad. Move on.
Yep.
Coach will be fired. GM will be fired. He'll be one of these guys who gets 5 offensive coordinators for 5 years in a row. He'll be that guy.
Well, depending on how if Virginia McCaskey is awake yet, we're still
– Or alive.
Hello? Anybody home? Are we doing the Weekend at Bernie's with you here? Depending on how fast she gets rid of Pace and Nagy, Fields might go through 4 or 5 actual head coaches in 7 years before we figure out that's a whole nother situation is the management up top and the people that are making these decisions, who goes, who stays. I think a lot of organizations would have already gotten rid of Nagy and Pace. I'm done with both of them myself, personally.
You were mad that
I'm through with them.
The Bears had that run at the end. You were cheering them out.
I wanted
the door.
Total teardown.
We've got the receipts.
Out.
We can pull the tape
mm-hmm.
of how just disheartened you were that they had that little winning streak at the end of the season to sort of backdoor their way into the playoffs. Because I taunted you with that.
Because I knew they wouldn't know damn
you knew. Good. You just knew that they had. That this is no different than when Dan Quinn, right, went on that little run 2 seasons ago to save his job. And I was like, all right, you know, give him a little rope. And then after, you know, they just kept giving him more rope. Like, you can't keep doing no. It's like they just gave him too much rope. That was the problem.
Yeah, exact same thing, where you were done with the guy before they were done with the guy, because you knew.
But I don't get the sense with this draft pick that those guys are on a quick hook. Like, if the Bears start 1-4, that it's like, that's it, you're out of here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that I don't know how deep in that Pace and Nagy are. Everyone else is saying that this is it, and if they don't turn it around, you know, immediately, then they're gone. I don't know that for sure.
I think they at least get the full season.
I don't know. We have to ask Virginia, and Virginia might not be there. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe she running the show?
From what I hear, she's still running the show. She's 100 fucking years old, and everything still goes through.
Sister Jean must be hanging out.
Give me that Fountain of Youth, whatever they're drinking. From what I hear, it's a little bit like the Vince McMahon in WWE, that he's not making the decisions, but everything still has to be approved by him.
Queen. She's like the queen. She doesn't actually run England, but you got to at least, like, you know, pretend.
Virginia's not doing anything day to day at all, but anything that gets done, she has to give the approval, basically. So.
Right.
So yeah, we'll see how all that shakes down. I'm not worrying about any of that, however, for the rest of the summer. 3, 4, 5 months of celebrations for Bears fans. Justin Fields is the man. We're all celebrating. I got my Bible, my rosary, my prayer beads. I got everything. Hoping and wishing and praying that we need to pull
Renard in for a show. We got to get him on.
You think I'm over the moon and praying and sunny side of the street?
Just the reason that I want to get him on. Because I want to see how he reacts to my reality for, you know. Like, you took it, like, I think you kind of knew what I was bringing.
You asked me what would I think if I didn't have the Bears glasses on.
Right.
And, yeah, that's a whole nother different situation.
Yeah, I don't know
situation.
What the white thing is with the left brain, right brain, you know, which one's, like, the more, like, emotional, artistic side. You're definitely on that side of your brain for Justin Fields.
Welcome to Soldier Fields, baby. Woo!
Yeah.
Let's go!
But you've got the devils on your shoulders. Like, you are willing, at least you're open to the opposite argument. Like, you understand where I'm coming from. You don't, you can disagree because you got the glasses on, right? I mean, you did have, like, an all Big Ten, like, running through the NCAA bracket. You went all Homer. This is the year of Homerism for you, apparently.
Not going to even worry about it, not thinking about it. Can't bring
the White
Sox. Can't nobody bring me down.
Just the White Sox in the World Series or something. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't wait till the football show. You have the Bears winning the Super. Justin Fields, MVP, Rookie of the Year. Bears are going to go 15-2 because we have 17 games now. And now week 18 now becomes the week of the coin.
Yeah, we knew the 17 was coming at some point, and we know the 18 is coming probably a couple years from now after that.
Yeah, eventually. They'll just get rid of the preseason.
Yes, which is fine by me because I don't even watch
the preseason. If they want to do more scrimmages and things along those lines and just not have it in a game format and do some, you know, have some contact, you know, practices, and I'm okay with stuff like that. If it makes just don't give me 4 weeks of preseason in the regular season.
I mean, that's going to kind of happen. There's no way to avoid that. I mean, if they don't have those games, those real preseason games to hit and knock the rust off of the offseason, then it's just that's just logically it's going to have to be week one, week two, week three are those games. That's just how
that's
it's going to be.
Because, yeah, the, what was it, the injury reports that we were going through after the first couple of weeks of the season, it was
like half the league.
Yeah, it was bad. So I know I know the NFL is a next man up, you know, that's you're not rooting for the player, you're rooting for the helmet. I get that, but for a league that says it says it cares about the safety of its players, you got to like clean these things up a little bit.
You couldn't even get that out of your mouth with a straight face. You know how much
I even had to go air quotes. I had to air quotes that.
You already know.
Yeah.
So, a couple more picks, and then we'll get to the final quarterback taken in the first round. That Dallas defense, which loves to give up 20 in the first half last year, every single game.
Man. Well, Sean Lee retired. Didn't you know?
They had to replace him immediately. Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons.
What's your over-under for Sean Lee still getting name-dropped during Cowboys Sunday night football games? They're still going to talk about him.
At least two mentions, maybe one in the pregame when
anytime,
they talk about
or any time a running back runs
missed.
Up the middle and hits a big hole. Oh, it's where Sean Lee normally would have been patrolling. Oh.
Well, they really could have used Sean Lee right there, Al.
Oh, man. Let me tell you, Al, you know who I'm missing right here? I'm missing Sean Lee. Oh, God.
Yep. At least over under two mentions.
You know what?
Sean Lee's
make name. Him. They should just make him the third man on the Sunday Night Football booth.
I don't know. They might be holding that for Jason Witten to give him another chance.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think Booger or Jason Witten are ever getting another. They're getting a chance. they're getting a chance when Dennis Miller gets another chance.
Damn.
I think Rush Limbaugh might get another chance before.
Oh, I knew you were going there.
and he's dead.
The ghost of Rush Limbaugh.
The ghost of Rush Limbaugh is going to be in the booth talking about the media is desirous of a black quarterback to be successful.
You don't think NBC is desirous to have Booger or Jason Witten?
It still
Witten
might actually be the only time I've ever actually heard the word desirous is in that quote.
That's true. You don't hear that word very often.
No.
So the Cowboys, I'd like the tape on Micah Parsons.
It's a need. You know what? I will give credit to teams who don't lose their shit on day one and draft. And they stick to a plan. The Cowboys stuck to a plan. They drafted an area of need. That's a winning pick.
Parsons made a lot of leaping grabs on the tape, and he made a lot of leaping grabs on the stage. I don't know if you saw the hug that he gave Roger Goodell. He almost tackled him off the stage.
I was waiting to hear Roger Goodell's back break. I seriously thought I was going to hear bones snap when he landed on Roger Goodell.
That was quite the man hug. So yeah, Goodell, you want to hug?
I thought I was watching
again?
Dirty
Here
Dancing.
You go.
I thought it was play a little dirty, you know, a little dirty dancing for that one. You should. The only thing would have been better is if
Goodell
would have started spinning him. He just puts his arms
puts
out
Goodell
and Goodell
in the corner,
just starts
right?
spinning him up on the stage. Yeah, that would have been a little odd.
Now I have the time of my life. The Clippers take the offensive tackle Rashawn Slater from Northwestern.
Yeah, everybody loved that pick on NFL Network. And there's another, again, a team with a rookie quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
Drafting, understanding the value in protecting the quarterback. They didn't draft him a wide receiver.
It's not
a sexy
this.
Pick. It doesn't make a splash. But, yeah, apparently this kid from Northwestern is just a mauler.
I never heard this description before. Lewis Riddick described Rashawn Slater. He was describing his excellent footwork. He said he had, quote, typewriters for feet, unquote. I guess that means he's really delicate and dancing around.
That shows your age because you lost half your audience when you just said typewriter.
Daddy, what's a typewriter?
What's a typewriter? Yeah.
I've never heard that before. A what?
What's a Rolodex? Oh.
Is that that old watch you guys wear?
It's like a rotary phone.
What, huh? All right, and then it's like a Walkman. All right, so then the Patriots get the 15, and Mac Jones is there for them from Alabama. Any impression on Mac Jones?
The Jets, though, also went O-line to double up on, you know, because they got that second pick after Zach Wilson, so that made sense. They, I believe, moved into that spot to jump up for another, you know, highly top. So don't want to sell that one too short because of, you know, we did talk about the Jets, you know, and Mel Kiper wasn't happy about them moving off of Darnold, and now here you are, they're drafting Wilson, and then the very next pick is a move to compliment him. And it feels like they're doing stuff for Zach Wilson they never did for Sam Darnold.
Right, that is why I guess I skipped it in my mind because I already talked about that. They were getting all these guys around the pick, and Darnold sitting at home going, oh, wow, that's interesting. Mac Jones
is kind of a guy. I mean... You know, he clearly talks the game. I didn't understand when he started, when they did his interview, and he said that he was going to the greatest franchise in NFL history. I was like, that's something a 20-year-old or 22-year-old would say.
He just got drafted by them. What's he supposed to say?
Did anybody who got drafted by the Broncos or the Cardinals or the Seahawks say they just got drafted by them? No. So, yeah,
that's
definitely
one of only
the
a handful
franchise
of
his lifetime. His lifetime. Probably, yeah, a little cringe, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the moxie and the gusto. And
like his moxie.
He's a guy. Yeah, he leads the league in guts.
There's only like three or four franchises someone could say that about in the league, and that's one of them. So I don't have a problem with that.
History? Like the league history?
It's going to be them or the Steelers or the boys, pretty much.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking the entire history of the National Football League. I'm thinking. Yeah, I'm going way back. I mean, you're talking, Cowboys, Steelers,
like you said,
Packers.
He's 20-something. So his history is not
so in his life, yes, the Patriots are the best team of his lifetime, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's all that matters to him.
He had a very ESPN take on that. History is apparently only started when ESPN started, or it's within the last 5 years. Or if it happened last night, something that happened last night will immediately go into the top 10 of the greatest things like that that ever happened.
Instant Classic, brought to you by Fully Vaccinated.
I already kind of crapped on Mac Jones a little bit when I was talking about the is it him or is it the receivers?
Both. Yeah.
And so, The Patriots clearly needed a quarterback. I guess that Cam Newton's still going to be around there. We'll see how long that lasts. You know, they get another season to try and coach him up, but I don't know. Not a real big arm, a little accurate, good accuracy, not a real big arm. Sounds familiar. Sounds like a Patriots quarterback we all remember.
That's what I'm afraid of. I'm so scared that this guy is going to turn out to be Brady Part 2.
Yeah, he just is he becomes more of a, you know, like a surgeon out, you know, and if that's just the Josh McDaniels running those little timing routes and rub routes, and Mac Jones is a statue, but you can't get to him because the ball's out quick. If that's what it turns into, and they're just trying to basically try to draft the next Tom Brady, maybe there's, you know, maybe there's method to the madness. I don't put anything past Bill Belichick.
That's exactly what I'm scared of. The McDaniels gets a quarterback that isn't, completely a statue, gets a younger, you know, a little more athletic, and just do what you're told. Just get coached up and don't try to be Superman. Just do what we need you to do to win football games. We'll put the defense around you and take care of that end, and you just do you and just get coached and don't try to, you know, be anything more than what you are. And I'm afraid that if he does that, he might have as long a career as Brady. I'm not saying, you know, 5-6 rings, anything stupid like that. I'm just saying, you know, longevity and consistency and perennial playoff contender and always you know, every time you look up, oh, there's the Patriots again. They're in the playoffs again. They're, you know, in the conference title game again. So that's what I'm scared of as far as that goes. I can very easily see that happening. I like how he quick walked from the back area there so fast that you thought he was a Saudi Arabian hostage getting released. He was just so happy to get the hell out of there.
I think he wanted to make sure that you get a baby if it runs out there fast enough, they can't change their mind.
Yes, before they change the pick around. The obvious comps to Brady. Got breathlessly spit out by Kuiper and the guys up there. That's understandable. You know, the measurables, the lack of speed, the reliance on accuracy, all of that. Just kind of frightening from a standpoint of somebody who watches a lot of football like we do. And we saw what they did with the 6th-round draft pick Tom Brady, which, God, just if they have anything close to that with Mac Jones again, it's just going to be nauseating.
Well, you know, and I think to the production, this is, you know, I think to the production that they got even when Brady wasn't there, that they got production out of guys, right? They got production out of Matt Castle. They got production out of Jimmy G. They got production out of Jake Brisket, right? These were their guys. Cam Newton doesn't fit that mold, right? I don't know how coachable Cam Newton was for them.
I don't know if coaching was the problem. I think he broke down physically.
He did, and they were also – I think he forced them out of their comfort zone to try to adapt the offense to his strengths, and it never really looked right. I mean, when their whole offense was predicated on get it down to the 1 yard line so Cam Newton can get destroyed. You know, but he's got at least 4 tries. So he's only got to get in once, he can get destroyed the other 3. All he's got to do is get it once. It just never looked like the Patriots offense, you know, and I don't think they had no faith in Jarrett Stidham. So,
no, God, no.
So if Jones becomes, you know, obviously Jones running that offense, even if he's, you know, 60%, 70% as effective and efficient as what Brady could do in that offense, in that system. Yeah, I said the S word.
Mm-hmm. Your guy, your system quarterback.
He's the GOAT. He's the system quarterback GOAT. This could be a sneaky success. And I think the Patriots have some rebuild time. This is the Bills division probably for a few years yet. So it's not like you have to get an immediate ascension, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sold on the Dolphins. I'm not sold on the Jets. So I could see the Patriots battling it out for, you know, second place this season coming up.
Espen showed a picture that Mac Jones drew at age 7 where he fantasized about being a football player.
Uh-oh.
And to show the how, you know, that dreams come true and all that stuff. So that's beautiful. That's wonderful. That's a human element and all of that good stuff. But I got to say, you didn't see this picture because you weren't watching the ESPN telecast, but the amount of misspellings and grammatical errors, he's 7, I understand that, but some of the just easiest words you could think of that were misspelled and just that dreaming of becoming a quarterback, he had to be a football player. He had to become a quarterback. He couldn't have been anything else. I don't think this guy's very bright.
I can tell you with a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old in this house, and my kids are smart.
Kids are going to be grammatically fine because they're you and your wife's kids.
I don't think they put the premium in school on spelling and grammar like they used to.
Now that I agree with. You know, not that I have kids at all, but I've seen, you know, among my cousins and some other people I've talked to with their kids, you're absolutely right.
All you got to do is get these kids to be 12, and then the phone will auto-correct everything for them.
that's true, if they want to, because a lot of them misspell things on purpose once they get that age, because they want to be cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, Q with a K-E-W-L. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Yeah, but you're right. They don't teach handwriting. They don't care as much about grammar, vocabulary. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know exactly what they're teaching, but it's not what we were learning.
That I will 100% agree with, without getting into broad details.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, the flow of the telecast was really bad. The flow of the draft, not ESPN's fault. I don't want to say the telecast necessarily, but the flow of the draft itself was bad. They were halfway through the first round, and it was 2.5 hours into the show. That's rough. That's bad layout. Bad spacing.
It was a long first round. It was 4 hours.
There were musical interludes interspersed in between there. It was very strange. I guess it could have been a worse telecast looking at the ESPN side of it, because blessedly, like I was saying, Greeny minimized the attempt at humor, tried to sort of blend in while being the clear leader at the desk. So I was thankful for that. He really did do a decent job trying to be the straight man instead of trying to be the entertaining, funny guy.
Still not the worst draft experience. I've had worse. The worst draft experience I had was the year where everybody decided that they were going to cut to the video of the guy getting the phone call before the pick was even announced. They had a few years where that's what they were doing, and it got really bad. And then I remember now it got so bad that they stopped doing it.
Right, they cut it out. The
league
said stop doing it.
Came in and said we are not going to keep doing this. So you've got all these guys speculating about who's going to get picked while this is they're talking over the video of the guy getting the call.
The guy sitting there talking with the team saying, "Yeah, thank you, appreciate it."
Well, I think
so
it's
going to
be this guy. Well, that's real genius because he's literally on video right now. Or even better, they're speculating it's going to be somebody else as they're cutting to the guy getting the phone call. Who's somebody different? And everything that you just said made you sound like an idiot.
You know what? I think it's going to be the guy that's on the phone crying right now. I'm going to take a guess it's going to be him.
I'm glad they stopped with that.
Yes, I am too.
We didn't have the sad eyes of any of the guys who precipitously dropped this year.
Yeah, Mac Jones was the closest to that. They weren't really hammering in on him in the back area of what used to be the green room. But like I said, you could just tell that he was happy when he got drafted to be out of there.
As the board was setting up, you could see he wasn't getting past 15. You could just see it.
Mm-hmm.
As you were watching these teams line up, because you're like, they don't need a quarterback. They don't need a quarterback. They don't need a quarterback. Okay. Fields goes to the Bears because they moved up. Although, tell me you didn't half expect them to just draft Mac Jones just because they're the Bears.
Exactly.
Once the Bears jumped up and took Fields and you looked at the three teams after Fields, which was the Cowboys don't need a quarterback, the Chargers definitely don't need a quarterback, and the Jets are stupid, but they're not that stupid. It wouldn't have... If the Jets drafted 2 first-round quarterbacks, just put them in the Thunderdome and duke it out.
Pretty much.
Yeah, why not? I mean, we had that RG3, and then you had, 3 rounds later, Kirk Cousins, right?
I just saw RG3 today throwing shade at Cousins still, saying that he's collecting checks up there in Minnesota. It's like, damn. He still isn't over it.
I think Kirk Cousins has more playoff wins than RG3.
Hmm.
Didn't RG3 get to that first playoff game against Seattle and just disintegrate?
Got his legs shredded, yeah.
But nobody touched him? Like, he literally, fell apart like the Blues Brothers car right there on the field?
Because
he just pulled up to the Daily Center and just everything fell off?
His leg was shredded going into the game, but he played through it anyway until he couldn't.
Well, that was some Shanahanigans, I believe.
Yes, it was.
So, it's great that RG3 wants to talk crap about, but getting RG3 to run your segment about talking crap about Kirk Cousins is kind of like getting Tim Tebow to give you a quarterbacking seminar about Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
So, don't be going to get RG3 to throw shade on Kirk Cousins, because I think he might still be a little salty about that.
It sure seems like he is. It sure sounds like it.
We're gonna get. What's the next thing we're gonna get about 5 years from now after Aaron Rodgers, if he's out of the leagues, they're gonna bring him in, throw some shade on Jordan Love.
This guy sucks. I don't know why the Packers drafted him.
He's just collecting paychecks. What a bum.
Yeah. The ESPN side of it, I actually would give it like a solid B. I think the one.
Okay.
Was another drinking game. The other issue that I had was anytime that there was a pick of a player that Greeny hadn't studied and clearly didn't know anything about, he would say, that's interesting or that's intriguing. That was another game to play that when he didn't know anything about the guy, interesting pick here, Mel.
Yeah, throw it to somebody. Yeah, that was the Alex Leatherwood pick. That was the Raiders pick. That was the one that stumped everybody.
Yes. Yeah, he had to get it to somebody who knew what they were talking about because he had no idea, clearly. Were there any other picks in the first round that that you wanted to comment on that stood out?
Well, of course, we had to have the band back together pick because you had to have Travis Etienne go to Jacksonville just because.
He's Clemson. You got to get the Clemson guys.
I never have seen a draft like this before. did not understand for the life of me. I know we missed this. We haven't heard from Bryce since the Cleveland thing.
Yep.
We know what happens. You know, we know where Bryce kind of like goes dark when the Steelers are getting rocked. That's fine. Did not understand a running back. I'm sorry, as a first round pick for a team with just a 40-year-old quarterback in a decimated offensive line. That's not going to help you.
Najee Harris from Alabama.
Might be a nice player. But
yeah, they clearly needed a back.
Yes, but you know there's running backs later in the draft. I mean, the fifth leading rusher in the NFL last year was undrafted.
Yeah.
And they still drafted a running back this year. They're like, screw you, James Robinson.
And also another issue that I'm worried about with Harris, looking at his film, a lot of hurdling tacklers on Harris's highlight reel.
Oh, are you sorry to say, is this a little Trey Lance comp here?
He's going to get hurt trying that shit in the NFL. You keep trying to jump over guys and someone's going to light you up.
Yeah. Or they're going to stand up, which is even worse.
Whoa. And either make you a eunuch.
Yeah.
Or flip you over head over heels and you land on your head into a Don Beebe.
Correct.
Either one you don't want. So, yeah, a lot of hurdling, which is fine in college. Don't do that in NFL.
You know, Alabama, though, running backs have some – there's a pedigree there, right?
Sure.
Ingram, Henry, that's fine.
Okay.
I don't hate the player. I hate the pick.
Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
That's
where you were going.
Yeah, you know, and then the Jaguars immediately go and get a running back, which I didn't know the Jaguars were in the position after going 1-15 of being in a luxury pick position. I know it was their second first round pick. This reeked to me of a team that thinks that they're way better than they really are.
But to me, it reeks of Urban Meyer is their coach, and he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, that too. They were interviewing Urban Meyer, and I was trying to fill in what he was saying when they were talking to him about, you know, the draft and, you know, how excited he is for the season. And I was waiting for him to say something along the lines of, yeah, it's easy when you can legally pay the players.
Oh.
You know, they could say that for any kind. Way less stressful when you can pay these guys above the table.
That's a little too honest. I don't think any coach is ready to do that. It's a little too on the nose.
All the eyes were on the Packers with the Rodgers drama. Like, oh, we're going to go. They're going to go and they're going to get them a weapon. No, Packers are kind of going to Packer.
They've remained steadfastly committed to never helping their passing game, ever.
With that said, that was still the number one offense in the league last year, I believe.
Okay, that's fine. But
with Aaron Rodgers,
that was the MVP.
and guys, right? Aaron Rodgers and the three-headed running attack, which is now a two-headed running attack because Jamal Williams is gone. They didn't lose. Did they lose that NFC Championship game because of their offense? No, they lost that game because of one dude. I believe that was Kevin King.
But also, as I said, the protection eventually is going to come in and bite them.
That as well. So the Packers' first three picks are corner, center, wide receiver. So there's your shopping list. Bing, bang, boom.
It's just funny that in the first round they
when you're supposed to send the message to your franchise Hall of Fame quarterback that we got your back and that no they are
nope
they, Packers gonna Packer they are steadfast in their they have a plan and they're sticking to it.
And that plan is to take Eric Stokes, the cornerback from Georgia, in the first round. Fuck you, Aaron Rodgers.
Yes,
I couldn't help but chuckle at that, of course. Now, how about the Ravens doing what the Packers maybe should be doing and trying to load up and get good receivers for Lamar Jackson? They go Rashad Bateman in the first round.
I still don't get it. Their problem isn't receivers. It's the guy throwing the football.
But you 100% cover that and make sure the world knows what the problem is once you get him actual receivers, right? Lamar Jackson better give this Rashad Bateman guy 8 targets a game because he doesn't have any other better options on the team. And once he does that and still can't get him the ball because he's not very good at quarterback, then there's no argument.
I mean, it's basically what's that offense? Hollywood Brown, right? The tight end.
Right, Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown.
Andrews, and then Hollywood Brown. So this becomes sort of like the third guy. And they have J.K. Dobbins. We know the Ravens can run.
But I'm talking about the passing game, which they clearly need that in order to win playoff games. The running game is great. Number one in the league running every year is fine until you get to the playoffs and you have to actually throw the ball every now and then.
Yeah, ask Marlon Humphreys, but he knows all about that.
Yeah, he's got some thoughts.
The Ravens clearly have a move. They have that go-to move, and that go-to move is dominate regular season and go one and done in the playoffs. That's the Ravens' move, right?
That's what I hear. That's what I keep hearing from their guys in the locker room.
And show up ridiculously small offensively in the playoffs as well.
We had that season where
Lamar Jackson had multiple 5-touchdown games, and then they got to the playoffs, and they look like they set offensive football back 70 years.
Yes.
So I get what you're saying. You're saying that you have to load that offense up so much that you can then point to Lamar and go, it's you.
Yeah, either he gets better as a quarterback and makes these weapons look good and the offense does what it's supposed to do, or you no longer have any excuses for him, and you know what you got to do.
The problem is that team is good on defense and so well coached that they can win 10 to 12 games every year, even with Lamar Jackson, right?
Yeah, they can, but I think the
fans will eventually tire, right?
Not just the fans, but everybody in football, on the networks everywhere talking about the Ravens every time they go 12-4 or 13 or 12-5 or whatever it's going to be, and get to the playoffs and host a playoff game and get embarrassed at home, which has happened, too many times now. And if it happens a few more times, then everyone's going to know what's going on.
And if we see Lamar Jackson Phil Rivers made a career out of this.
No.
Right?
Yeah, it's not quite
couple,
like this.
They had a couple in deep playoff runs, right? They got to an NFC, AFC championship game a time or two, but they were really good for a really long time. And you just kind of knew they weren't going to the Super Bowl. I think that's what the Ravens are. The Ravens are like the new Philip Rivers Chargers. I don't know if that's a good comp, but
Yeah, it's not exact, but I understand where you're going with that.
They're good enough.
You know, right. They're really good, and you also know they're not getting anywhere near a Super Bowl.
Right, and the problem is they're too good to just change horses midstream on the quarterback. If they keep going 12-4 or, you know, 12-5, I guess, you mm-hmm. know, start getting used to this.
Yeah.
But if they're winning somewhere between 10 and 12, 10 and 13 games every year with Lamar Jackson, and he's filling up the stat sheet. But no, you clearly last year could look at that Ravens off. We talked about it in length on this show. I mean, a lot of that was, you know, we were getting calls from Bryce from Brooklyn who loves dunking on the Ravens.
Yeah.
But it was correct. You could look at an offense that was clearly, it wasn't boring like the Bears. It was broken. I think was the word that we used for the Ravens offense all the time.
Yeah. And this is one of the steps you take to fix a broken offense is just keep getting weapons and until it's not broken anymore. And if it continues to remain broken, then you know what you're dealing with and you got to
right.
act accordingly.
Yeah. Cause John Harbaugh, he's not going anywhere.
He shouldn't. Damn good coach.
He's a top five coach in the league. Top three even. He's one of the best coaches. That is the Ravens do not ever get the stupidest team in football. They're sound offensively. They're sound defensively. They're not sound offensively, but you know what I mean. They have been previously sound offensively, right?
Parts of them are very sound. When you road grade and have the number one running team every year, then that's obviously sound.
Right. It's easy, though, to have the number one rushing attack when the quarterback runs for 1,000 yards.
That's a big part of it, yes.
That's no different than the DVD, right?
Sure.
You know, little old-school Atlanta reference there for people. Dunn, Vic, and Duckett, I believe, were the DVD. All you need is Lamar and two serviceable NFL running backs, and you're going to lead the league in rushing.
Lamar and dudes.
Yeah, because do we know how good J.K. Dobbins? I forget the other guy who's decent.
Gus Edwards.
Gus Edwards, yeah. So are they just – I mean, if Gus Edwards or J.K. Dobbins get traded to another team, they're probably kind of just guys, right?
Possibly.
Yeah, so we don't know.
We don't really know.
Don't know, but yeah, that's a team that will probably run for 2,500 yards again. No problem.
Again. But then the other half of it, the other end, that's what needed addressing, the aerial
yes.
part of it.
At some point, you have to put actual points up on the board. At some point, you're going to have to come from behind, which they cannot do.
And to come from behind, you have to go through the air. You can't come from behind by running the ball. That's just
fine. Right. They are the most front-running team. The only team I have ever seen come from behind running the football was the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott, his rookie year. Like the Cowboys would get down 17 and they were just like, nah, Jason Garrett, nah, we're still running this ball. We're still running. That was I was starting to oh, is Jason Garrett learning? And then, nah, he didn't learn anything.
No. Learn how to clap.
Yeah.
Yay! We're going to keep running. Yay! Gotta love the clapper. A couple more observations I had. My Titans perpetually looking for wide receivers and DBs. They had a pretty good draft as far as that goes. They go Caleb Farley, the cornerback in the first round, who had something called microdiscectomy back surgery all the way back in March.
Well, that's way better than testicular torsion.
It is, as far as what you would want to endure, but it also sounds very painful. And this is a thing. This is a thing for the Titans. They just love drafting hurt guys and hoping that they pan out. So good luck on that again. So hopefully that works. Solid pick by the Colts at 21. I got to give props to the Colts because they're rapidly becoming like one of my favorite teams in the league, like not just the way they're put together, but the way they do it on the field is something a little different about them. Like they got an edge. They got an attitude. I think Philip Rivers had a little to do with that last year. Of course he's gone now,
Don't forget their quarterback is now Carson Wentz. Although I wanted to forget. You and I did not crap on that move.
I mean, they didn't give up much, I don't think.
And he gets reunited with Frank Reich.
And that's the thing, that if he does return to that form, that's probably how it's going to happen, right?
Yeah,
that's
but
like
you're
the only way.
You're apparently a quitty pay guy.
I'm a quitty pay guy from Michigan.
Big Ten, that's why. Because you've become a Big Ten homer all of a sudden.
Because it's not because of Big Ten. It's because it's more help for the league's, I think, most underrated defense. People are sleeping on the Colts, and they had the
Bills on the ropes.
And they load up again. I don't think they're going anywhere.
No, they'll be. Well, that division's a dumpster fire now. That division is now. I mean, you still got Tennessee, and with Jacksonville will probably win more than one game. But Houston's a joke. And yeah, that's Indian Tennessee, right? I mean, that's the division.
Unless Trevor Lawrence really is that, you know, that dude and turns everything around. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen.
This year, even going from one win to five or six would be like, hey, good job, kid.
If he's that dude, they might go to like seven or eight. I'm not predicting it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's still not going to get you into the playoffs. I mean, it gets you into a solid, maybe you're contending for second place. The Colts and the Titans, I mean, the Colts for sure. The Colts, if Carson Wentz is any good at all, are a double-digit win team again, I would believe.
I'll agree with that. Are they doing the seven playoff teams again, or are they going back to normal?
I don't know. Do they know?
I haven't heard. If they said, I didn't hear it, so I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate
it
either.
I think also now by going to this, I would say you didn't add any weeks to the playoffs by doing that.
Right.
But I think after a 17-week regular season, two teams should still get the bye. I liked the idea of only one team getting the bye because I think teams played for more late than they had before.
I agree with that.
So I think if that is a competitive balance issue, so we don't have those weeks, what would now be week 17 and week 18, like meaningless matchups, you know, where mm-hmm. nobody's playing. We didn't even have that this year that bad in week 17 because you had teams that were still playing for seeding because you know, there were a lot of teams, you know, there were teams nobody really had that number one seed like all sewn up.
Yeah, so there's pros and cons to it. I just in general want it was so streamlined the way it was with the four wild card games and then the two teams with a bye and then leading right into the four playoff games the next weekend.
Yeah. Well, that's six, those two triple wild card games, that was football overload.
That was bonkers. That was a
bonkers weekend.
You had
games going from noon until 10.
Both nights, both days.
2 days in a row. It was wild. That's why it's wild card weekend. What was it? Super mega wicked awesome wild card weekend? We have to pull the tape on that because we had a pretty lengthy description because they were going a little over the top on it. So did we.
They're doing it again with the branding of this season because they're doing the schedule drop, I think, next week.
Oh, I saw that. They couldn't stop pumping that. Like, I'm not marking my calendar for...
For a schedule release?
Yeah. Like, this is now a holiday or something?
And because it's 17 games, they got the branding for that. It's the longest season in NFL history. And they kept pushing that as well.
It's a special week 17 edition of week 16.
It's the longest season ever. When they go to 18, are they going to do that shit again?
Just
like, really?
Wait now because we get to hear about all the records being quote-unquote broken because we're adding an extra game, right?
Yeah, Renard was tweeting us on something like that because
so
amazingly the
now
Bears
for
never 6, had
1,000 yards.
Right. The Bears, going back to Bears quarterbacking and how terrible it's been, have never had a, is it a 4,000 yard season?
You know what? They still won't.
Even with 17.
Even with 17.
Ugh.
First, you have to have health.
That may be.
Right? I don't know if there's a guarantee. I don't know if we're going to see, like, there's a legitimate case to be made for, like, if you're Justin Fields, let's say, there's a legitimate case to be made for starting somebody else the first two games because that's your preseason. And you might not have your blocking schemes right. You don't want guys to go out there and get destroyed. Right? I'm just saying I might protect an asset like that a little bit more versus throwing them out there with everybody blown up the first 2 weeks like we had, if that's the way it's going to be from now on. I would protect the player.
I can absolutely see Andy Dalton starting the season for a different reason. Chicago played it up when they signed him as if it was like a major deal, it was something big.
He's their starter. He's the greatest thing ever.
Tweeting out the, QB1 with a picture of Andy Dalton and whatnot. And, of course, everybody on draft night tweeting out pictures of him saying QB2. So I can see them going with Dalton just to do the whole respect the veteran thing and act like he's their guy and that Justin Fields is, we're just going to bring him along and coach him up. And they'll use the words that you were just saying, which is, bring him along slowly and coach him and let him get adjusted to the league.
Just don't do the Tua thing to Andy Dalton. If Andy Dalton starts the season for the Bears and he's playing really good, don't bench him.
Ah.
Like, because, right? That's what they did with Tua. We were merciless in the way we treated Brian Flores and that coach, because it was the he's in, he's out. The closer. I mean, don't.
Well, that was really dumb.
Whatever you do, just don't do that. That should be the cautionary tale for how not to put in a rookie quarterback. First of all, Tua didn't deserve to be put in, and then he didn't deserve to be yanked. You made the move. Don't do that to Justin Fields. Please, Bears, don't do that to Justin Fields. As much as I would love it for the value of what it would do to this show, because it would drive you insane. As much as I would appreciate the drama it would add to the air, I don't do that to this kid. Don't Tua this kid, or Fitzpatrick him, depending on your point of view.
Separate from the whole closer thing, which is idiotic, and we definitely gave Flores his fair share of crap for that.
Yeah, I think our award show was just littered with not many good things for the Dolphins.
No. Separate from that was the whole decision in the first place, as you were just talking about, that the fact that Fitzmagic was playing probably much better than the Dolphins figured he would. And so they went ahead with what was obviously a preconceived plan all along to get to the bye week and yank him for Tua, which is that's fine to have that plan, but you have to recognize and sort of read the room or whatever you want to call it. And you got to know that your guy is not playing bad enough to get benched. He's actually playing well and has the team in contention, and your veterans in your locker room are looking at you.
Yeah, and he was well-liked. He's well-liked.
He's
well-liked. He was on Tua when Tua got to come in with the garbage time. He wouldn't have been doing that if he knew he was going to be getting the cane coming out from, the stage right.
The veterans are thinking they're going to have a playoff contending team all of a sudden.
Right.
And then you get the Sandman King and you get the hook, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Why would you do that now? Yeah. What? So, yes, please don't do that.
And then the cherry on top is Fitzpatrick can't start that last game because he's hurt.
Right.
And Tua plays one of the worst games of quarterback I've ever seen in my life against a team playing for nothing.
Fitz got the goop, right? He got the COVID.
Yeah, he couldn't play. That's all I know. I think that's what it was. And that game that Tua played against Buffalo, who's literally just there. For no-
they played their starters for like a quarter or something.
Yeah. Well, and that was it. And they got rolled.
Yes.
They just lose.
Like they shouldn't have been on the field with them.
And that was their season, because that was win and you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fitting end. So that's what I'm saying. That's the cautionary tale for the Bears. If you're going to start Andy Dalton, at least let him play himself out of the job or get hurt, right? Or be, you know, be ineffective and you make the halftime change, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go on to the limb and say Dalton does not have the first six games of the season that Fitzmagic had last year. I don't think Dalton's
he
capable
doesn't go,
of that.
Yeah, that was still only 3-3, I believe. But that was
it was,
not,
but it was
it
much better
was,
quality football than most people
correct.
Expected.
They weren't losing their games because of Fitzpatrick.
Right.
I think the Bears would have the ability to lose some games because we've seen Andy Dalton.
Yeah, we have.
We know, especially if the Bears have any Thursday night games, we know what Andy Dalton can do.
We've seen Andy Dalton. That's why we didn't know why they signed him in the first place.
Here's my bold prediction. If the Bears have any early season Thursday night games, that will be the moment.
He goes out and goes 3-16 or something awful.
I don't know. There's something about Andy Dalton on Thursday nights that gives me hives.
And they announce immediately after the game that it's going to be Justin Fields the next week.
Yes.
That might happen. There's any number of things that might happen under Matt Nagy and the Bears because, ooh boy, has it been an adventure.
But you're optimistic. You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Until the season starts, it's all sunshine and flowers. Absolutely.
It's strawberry
fields. Go Bears, go. Bear down, Chicago Bears. That's all you can do at this point. Everyone else can beat it up and nitpick it and criticize it. That's fine. I understand it. But as a Bears fan, I'm just saying it's all sunshine and roses right now. It's all rainbows.
That's good. You got 5 months to enjoy it.
Damn right.
Well, actually, 3 months. We're already into May. Can you believe that?
June, July.
Yeah, 3 months. We're into preseason or whatever they're doing.
So 4 months. Four solid months,
right. We get to Memorial Day, the Labor Day. That's 4 months to Labor Day. Then the hand-wringing can begin. Then shit gets real.
Celebrate good times. Come on. I don't know what you're talking about, man.
You got
I'm
the
damn over here.
They're going all the way.
They're going to win the Super Bowl.
82-0. That Bears. Right. Dwayne Haskins better not be walking around at no malls. That's all I can say. I just call him Dwayne Haskins. I meant Justin
uh-huh.
Fields.
Uh-huh.
Dak Haskins.
So we're now in the
after-after show. The aftermath. I got to write that one down. I got to remember Dak Haskins because I'm pulling that one out at some point.
I just wanted to clean up some loose ends. We have a lot of content. We had a lot of things we're doing. We had the Oscar show last weekend. Poor Dave, his winners did not come in as he was talking about. I told y'all they was giving Anthony Hopkins that Best Actor Oscar. I told you,
that was the
For Your Consideration performance, and it was just,
Dave said that Anthony Hopkins should win, but he wasn't going to win because Chadwick Boseman was dead. I believe we talked about that. That Dave, I'd have to pull the tape, but I thought he clearly had Anthony Hopkins as a should win, or at least was not like, if he won, it wouldn't be like undeserved.
No, I wrote it down. He said it was the guy from that did the death metal.
That's the guy who he thought should win. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. They gave it to Anthony Hopkins. So, I mean, it's not like Anthony Hopkins is a great actor, but yeah, I was shocked, and so apparently was the Academy because they kind of rejiggered the telecast so they could send it off on a high. And
now, here's your Best Actor winner. Everybody, get on your feet for Anthony Hopkins. All right, good night, everybody.
Well, we're just going to put a photo up on the screen of Anthony Hopkins and end the telecast. I was half waiting for them to bring out the Kinko's copy for Drew Brees.
That was a thing.
That was up there with the La La Land Moonlight thing.
Yeah.
I mean, because they changed the format of the mm-hmm. show. First of all, if you're going to do that, you better know who's going to win.
Apparently they didn't.
I guess not.
Apparently they actually were on the up and up with those ballots. They actually didn't know who was going to win.
But they were so sure that Chadwick Boseman was winning that award that they changed, like it's always Best Picture ends the show. Always.
He was even a heavy betting favorite. I should have put some money on Anthony Hopkins. Man.
You should have. And then it doesn't pan out. And it's like you could just, like, every air, the sales. I mean, it's like the next day you literally had to have, like, people were literally, like, apologizing. You know, you almost mm-hmm. felt bad for Anthony Hopkins because people were like, how dare he win? How dare he be one of the best actors, you know, of our of our lifetimes? How dare you, Anthony Hopkins?
How dare he turn in an Oscar worthy performance and actually get the Oscar? How could he do that?
Like, he stole the award and then he has to give this, like, canned speech. It's not even about him. He has to start giving the speech. Oh.
Yeah,
you know what I have expected was they had that, because did you see that where he had, the taped thing or whatever he did from, like, England?
No.
Where he lives? I was half waiting for, like, Kanye to show up.
Chadwick Boseman had the greatest performance of all time. Of all time.
That would have made it all perfect. All of a sudden they're just doing this canned thing from Anthony Hopkins standing there with the beautiful, like, English scenery and the countryside behind him, and the next thing all you see is Kanye step into frame.
I'm gonna let you finish. Frances McDormand for Best Actress came in. Dave had Carey Mulligan for that.
Yeah.
He was all about Carey Mulligan, and he was also all about the movie itself.
Yeah, he seemed most impressed by that movie. Yeah, no, that was Nomadland. That won Best Picture.
Yes, it did. He was what's the name of that movie? Promising Young Woman. Yeah, he said that should win and was going to win. Like, he was all about that movie.
Yeah, and we've never had Dave do a Oscars recap, because this one was all over the place.
The Best Supporting Actor for Daniel Kaluuya, which that one
we knew. That was the high betting odds one.
Yeah, but that was one that he thought Sacha Baron Cohen should have won for the Chicago 7 movie.
Right.
And then he thought Glenn Close was going to bring home supporting actress for Hillbilly Elegy, and it wound up being the foul-mouthed grandmother from that Korean movie. So we figured it would get some kind of love, but you correctly predicted it wasn't going to get Best Picture because they already took care of the Koreans last.
We already did our Korean movie. That's off the list. Check.
We're not doing that 2 years in a row.
Right.
Everyone knew that the director, Zhao, was going to get that award. And I went back and listened, and it actually turns out I picked every winner correctly, and it made perfect sense because I had no money. I had no stakes in that. So.
Oh, okay.
Of course. So what happens today? Today I went back out to the dog track to bet the Kentucky Derby.
The Kentucky Derby. Yeah, I saw you posted your picks. So
I posted my picks. And I was going to have a big breakdown of my picks on the after show last night before we moved the show to tonight.
Sorry.
Well, but as it turns out, my picks sucked.
Oh, okay,
so
good. So this is why it made it into the after show.
Yes, because they completely blew, and I apologize to anybody who put any value into it. My horse that I picked to win, there was only 19 horses that raced in the Kentucky Derby this year. The horse that I picked finished 17th. I sucked. Ooh. My horse sucked. My second pick, I think, finished 5th. My third pick, I don't know where he was. The only thing I got right was I had the favorite finishing 4th, and I think he finished 3rd. I knew the favorite wasn't going to win because I was not impressed with him in his prep races. So that much I got correct. And the other thing I got correct was I was – going to talk about one of the prep race winners that I absolutely had no intention of betting in the Derby, because in winning his prep race, he like completely ran off the page. He was running to the right and trying to like leave the track, but he still won the prep race. And I'm like, okay, you can't do that in the Derby because there's 19 other horses and you can't go running off to the right like that. And sure enough, he did not win either. So I got it right where the horses who I knew wouldn't win, they didn't win. What I got wrong was the horse that did win that I did not have any, I didn't have in any of my picks in my superfecta, my trap. I didn't have him anywhere on the board, and he came home and won the whole race. I think he was 12-1 by the time he won. So somebody made a good amount of money on it. The NBC brought in that guy that was doing like the election prediction maps, and he was really popular doing that. So they brought him on, and all of their horse racing experts, he was the only one that picked the winning horse.
Wow.
And not only did he pick the winning horse, who I should say by name, but I don't have the list of horses in front of me like I did before. Here's the list. Medina Spirit or Medina Spirit, that's who won the race. Not only did he pick the winner, but then I go on social media and he's showing off the $100 to win ticket that he bet on that horse at 12-1 odds, which means that motherfucker, who's already probably rich, you know, beyond his dreams, made a shit ton of money on that horse at $1,300 or whatever that came in on one horse, on one ticket. That's my dream right there, to just put $100 on the nose on a you know, long shot like that, and to have it come in, and he did it. So all props to him, but man, my pick sucks. So yeah, I wanted to definitely bring that up, that I nailed all the Oscars picks, and that made me a grand total of $0. And then I took out, I'm embarrassed to even say how much, but I took out a decent amount of money from the ATM before I go over to bet the Kentucky Derby, and all of those tickets are complete losers. So once again, when I put my money where my mouth is, it doesn't go well.
Lesson learned.
Yeah. Well, so, not really, because I'll probably go back and bet again next year.
I'll end the show on this one for you.
All right.
This is the list, just in our lifetime, of the great Ohio State NFL quarterbacks.
Uh-oh.
Troy Smith. You remember the great Troy Smith?
Oh, yeah.
What about JT Barrett? You remember the great JT Barrett? What about Braxton Miller? We all remember, we'll never forget Dwayne Haskins.
You're not going to let us.
Never forget. #NeverForget. Dak Haskins.